And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
No fear here on Declare Your Independence of me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEAUT full studios of Freedoms of the Nest, freedomsphoenix.com. Okay, that's better than most. All right, what we're going to do today is Davi Barker's hanging out, so we're going to be spending today going over a bunch of stuff and all the great conversations that we were having we will share with you. In the first hour, we're going to have Karen Katowski from... Virginia. She is or West Virginia. She is a lieutenant colonel, retired Air Force from the Pentagon, and we're having trouble getting hold of her. Go ahead and try her one more time this break, see if we can get her, and then Davi and I will get into it. You know, we're going to be talking about her article. She wrote, "Can the Deep State Be Cured?" Her perspective is unique in that she was deep in the state, and she
was the deep state.
The deep state kind of references the shadow government, you know.
Oh, okay.
The they, them, those that really run stuff kind of thing. And, you know, the state has got deep root and tentacle in, you know, that kind of thing. So it's just her observation from inside. She, you know, big Ron Paul supporter. She got early retirement. She ran for Congress. But, you know, the real story is, I don't know, do you know Karen Katowski?
I've never met her.
Well, I mean, you know who we're talking about, right?
Vaguely, yeah.
She writes for Lou Rockwell a lot and so on. How we knew about her, this is a good story. She wrote, Colonel Hackworth was a well-known for the troops guy from Vietnam. And he wrote a column until he died a few years ago. It was a online blog that was Military Weekly or This Week Military, something to do with the troops. And when the Iraq War was getting going, and it's 2003, 2004, 2005 round in there, and it's just the invasion started in early February of 2003. We had, you know, that's interesting. It's September 2001, and it was like, let's see, a year and a half later before they actually had ground troops go in and, you know, take Baghdad.
Yeah.
It was so important we had to wait a year and a half, okay? But it was, by that time, it was already planned, here we go.
Well, yeah, there were already huge protests before they even did anything.
I remember that I started doing radio in February of 2003. I had on the it was Kyrsten Sinema, which is, she was progressive left green kind of anti-war ride the movement thing, and she went Democrat, and now she's a U.S. congressman from here in Arizona, super communist. Okay, and I had her on the show, and they were talking about the protests, anti-war protests that were going on all over the world, mm-hmm. And it started in March of 2003, and there was a big one downtown here, and the big deal was she wanted us libertarians to go. I go, we can't. I mean, if you're going to be your event, you won't let us wear our guns, and we always wear our guns to protest. No, you can wear your gun. I go, okay. So we did. You know, we went, and it kept, because we had our guns and video cameras around the corner when they did the march through the town and, you know, went past the Army Recruiting Center, you know, that kind of stuff. Going to Saturday afternoon, midday, late morning or something at downtown Patriot Park there. And we do their little drum circle thing. And it's Saturday, down middle of 10. No, who cares? You know, nobody did, let them do their 20-minute of who gives a crap. And they brought in the horses. They had the shields out, the batons, the riot gear, banging on their shield kind of thing.
Well, obviously, drum circles are an existential threat to Western civilization.
That's exactly how they felt, too. I tell you, you'd see it in the cops. I mean, yeah, we'll get some, you know. And so I go, whoa. So I have my sons on one corner. They're holding signs that we had done for the radio show, you know, like 4x5, these big, you know, core plastic signs. So they were on one corner. I was on one corner, had my 9mm, you know, Beretta Galco leather holster on. And one of the other friends, so we had three of the four corners kind of, you know, taken, and they could see that guys with guns, radio talk show signs, video cameras, and it held off the horses just long enough. They got a call for instruction, got away just long enough, then the drum circle dissipated and it was over and done.
Okay.
You know, they were coming in. I just, whoa, I'm getting this up. Oh, hell yeah. Well, keep in mind, no three, it wasn't like, you know, everybody had a video camera in their cell phone. That was kind of before that. And but we had video cameras. So this was in, it was, everybody come up to me, they thought I was a policeman because I had, like, you know, a Galco.
You had a gun on.
Well, yeah, but it was kind of a, you know, looked kind of policey, and I looked policey and had a haircut and, you know, whatever. So it was, that was my first experience in, you know, dealing with the anti-war guys that were kind of this progressive, not libertarian thing. And we kind of melded a little bit and they let us get away with it. Should go listen to that show. You know, this is Kyrsten Sinema back in the day. All right. Now, at that time, the protests in the streets were more than at the peak of the Vietnam War.
Yes. Yeah, they said that it was the biggest protests in American history before the war even started.
Right. Before the war even started, there were more people in the streets protesting a war that had yet begun than there were at the peak of the Vietnam War.
Right.
This was amazing to me, and I thought, nah, they're not going to, they can't. Well, Karen Kotowski, she was in the Pentagon where they had the Office of Special Plans and so on with Rumsfeld and Cheney in there. Well, she was writing, exposing what they were doing under a pseudonym of a male name.
Okay.
On Colonel Hackworth's Military Weekly or something like that. Well, during that time, Charles Goyette, you know, was reading, he had Colonel Hackworth on as his, you know, adjunct, as his Secretary of State or something like that on his radio program every week or two. He'd be on and tell him what was really going on. So that's why Clear Channel did not love them some Charles Goyette. Even though he's number one in this slot, he's doing great, it did not fit in with the Clear Channel doctrine.
Sure.
So what Karen did is she exposed, and they're looking around because they're, you know, they're, got misogynist. I mean, you know, they're it's all male kind of. It never even occurred to them that it would be the woman sitting right there. Hmm. So she takes early retirement eventually, and, you know, it got out that we knew, you know, who it was, and she retires and screw you. And now she teaches at, you know, college as a professor or something, and living on a farm. But every now and then she'll come up and she'll write a really good article from a deep understanding of the deep state.
Sure,
you know, cool. You're daily kind of seeing, you know, the Cheney thing. You're getting a dose, you know. She was there when the Pentagon was hit on 9/11. The thing that she did say on the air, and she did the movie Why We Fight and stuff. You were talking about
that.
Oh,
yeah, I have that.
And she was in there. And one of the things that she did was when the, I don't know, whatever the hell it was that hit the Pentagon, a bunch of experienced military guys are out there, and they go, cordite.
They could smell it.
They could smell it.
Yeah.
They said, I don't know what the hell that was, but I know that smell. That's a missile detonation of something, something.
Right.
So it's always been from the inside kind of look with Karen. So I'm looking forward to talking to her. If we can't hook up today, we'll get her to come back. She probably forgot, overslept, whatever, because she's usually been really good about it. But that is of interest. And then Davi and I, last night, we watched Sir No Sir.
Yeah, I'd never seen it before.
You know, we'll talk about that, because that just goes right in with this. I'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence in just a little bit.
This is your Robertson Roberts Brokerage Daily Precious Metals Update. In early trading Tuesday, gold is $4 higher at $1,343 per ounce. Silver is 12 cents higher at $19.07 per ounce. Bitcoin is trading at $582. If you've thought about buying gold or silver but didn't know how or what to buy, we can help you without the high-pressure tactics. Call Robertson Roberts Brokerage today at 800-874-9760 or visit us online at rrbi.co.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. Davi Barker hanging out. You know, one thing, you were starting to tell me a story about anti-war protests that started in San Jose when you were younger. And I said, save it for the show.
Save it for the show.
All right. Go ahead and tell us.
So, you know, there's no big, like, libertarian heavyweights in this story, but this is when I was a young Marxist in college at San Jose State, and we had a war protest, and it was sort of, you know, it was they said it was the biggest war protest in American history, and it was designed to coincide with the national protest. And you had, like, a lot of the anti-war organizations connected with a lot of the student organizations, and you had this whole big uproaring sign-waving thing in downtown San Jose. But, you know, we young radicals, we thought we were going to be so hardcore and we were going to block traffic. And so I and a bunch of friends just laid out in the middle of the street. Now, I don't advocate this now. I actually think this is really obnoxious. But I was a young college student, so this is what I did. And this cop comes up to me and starts screaming at me in the street to get out of the street or he's going to arrest me. And so I say to the guy, I'll tell you what, I'll get out of the street if you leave the protest and come and let me buy you a cup of coffee. And he does.
Really?
So me and this cop leave the protest entirely.
Okay, so let me get this straight. Okay, what year? This is like 03.
This is 03.
Spring.
Yeah.
And you're how old then?
Oh, 21, 22.
Okay, so you're not like a kid, but you're young. Are you in school or something?
I'm in college, yeah. I'm going to art school at San Jose State.
Okay, so you just like, hey, dude, you know, if we leave the protest, let me buy you some coffee. I'll get out of the street.
Yeah.
And he goes, okay.
He goes, okay.
Oh, how old is this guy? Was he?
He was probably in his 30s, mid-30s.
Okay, so he wasn't like an old retired.
No, he was a young guy. And it was kind of great because, first off, I took a cop off his beat. That's pretty cool. Less cops at the protest. Awesome. But
if everybody did that.
The other thing that was cool was that, like, we got to sit and talk about the war, and we had this whole conversation about how he was just as much against the war as I was, and he just
we
felt
can't have you protesting in the
yeah,
street.
He just felt like he had to follow orders. That was all, and so we had a conversation about that mentality of let's just follow orders despite our own conscience, and I just thought it was a really productive conversation, and I appreciate that he was willing to do that.
Do you remember his name or anything? You follow up on him?
No.
But you infected.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. Bitcoin, not bomb.
Well, it was before that.
I know.
But it was, you know, we called it cop foo. We had sort of like techniques on talking to police officers to sort of psychologically disarm them.
Oh, you mean like kung fu kind of thing?
Yeah.
Cop foo?
Yeah.
That cop fooed him. That's right. Good. Talk your way out of a ticket. I cop fooed
him. Yeah, if they're looking for someone holding pot, then they're looking for someone making like avertive movement or acting suspicious. So if you're holding pot, the first thing you want to do is go up to the officer face to face and be as friendly as possible, because that absolves you of suspicion.
Not anymore.
No, it probably
that
doesn't.
Makes you suspicious.
Now he's got a drug dog standing next to him, and he'll probably just wrap you right back into the back of his car. But
they alert on everything.
But, yeah, there was this notion that there
was
a sort of...
My dog was breathing, you were holding.
Yeah, right.
So how long were you sitting with him?
Oh, the rest of the protest, an hour at least.
No.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So how did he leave? How did you leave? Did you guys, you know, have a bromance later or what?
No, he decided he had to leave because it was the other, and something came on his radio. The other officers were going somewhere else or something, and he decided it was time to go. But it was a really productive conversation, I thought, and I just, you know, for me, it was a nice kind of proof of concept that you can, it's sort of the, you can win more flies with honey than with vinegar or whatever. Like, if you just, like, show this person a little humanity instead of screaming back at him, maybe you know, you can
persuade
him.
There was another protest that was, it was against Bush being here. Something. It was some protest. It was kind of, you know, the progressive left out there, dreadlock from something. And it was downtown, and I was down there videotaping. I was covering. I wasn't so much a part of that one, but it was something for the radio show. And I remember they had them up on the sidewalk. You know, people were on the sidewalk. You could be on the sidewalk as long as you were moving, okay? So they had to, you know, they doing this little daisy chain walking around, you know, in the loop kind of deal.
Yeah.
And they're moving, but you couldn't be on the street, and they had horses that were, you know, patrolling the street. Yeah, don't get on the street, don't get on the street. Well, they just let them do their thing. Well, that wasn't good enough. They you know, it had to cause some controversy. Somebody had to get arrested or beat down or something. So the woman that was, she was the head representative of the ACLU, American Civil Liberties Union, and she just, to show her stuff, she stepped down off the curb and, you know, blah, 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 or stepped on the curb and turned around to address the people or something like that.
Jaywalking, life in prison.
Something like that. I mean, it didn't take but, 5 seconds. I mean, she stood on there, boom. Horses came over, you know, banged into her. They surrounded her, arrested her.
Yeah.
Okay? Just skip to the end, man. We're just waiting for somebody to step on the street and you're arrested on the street. I've had my share of arrest being at protest. But it was always for a really good reason.
I've still never been arrested.
He was holding the sign!
Holding the sign.
Holding the sign! Said, legalize freedom, register libertarian.
He was being subversive.
Yeah, no, it was, yeah, Janet Reno was coming to speak at a thing, and they just, they had to get me off of the, you know, the, well, it was at a school in the parking lot. So it was stupid, and, you know, and they dropped charges, and we filed suit, and all this other stuff, but it was just because they didn't want you there in the background for the television cameras. That
right.
That was the whole thing. Whatever they got to do, we are not having footage going out with a god dang sign says freaking libertarian on it. Janet Reno, that ain't happening.
Yeah.
So it became a thing. But there's been, what are some of the other protests or things that you've gone to that we could learn from?
I was at both Occupies. Well, not both. Like, there were only two. I was at Occupy Oakland and Occupy San Francisco. Now, I preferred Occupy San Francisco because it was at the Federal Reserve, and there were much more libertarians there, and it was sort of, like, it was a more principled protest in my observation.
Oakland was just hoodlum?
Oakland was, it was explicitly communist. Like, it was interesting because they were more like a city. Like, they set up in the park in front of City Hall, and they had 100 tents, and they had a soup kitchen, and they had little charging stations where you could ride a bike and charge all your devices, and they had a media group, and they had a safe spaces group, and they had a, it was organized.
They had their mesh Wi-Fi network and blah,
yeah,
blah, blah.
Yeah, they had, so they had their own security. They had porta potties that they had purchased. But the thing with them
funded
was
funded by Soros.
Well, no, it was actually, I don't know where the funding came from, to tell you the truth.
Soros.
I know that, but it was communist and not like Democrat, like communist. Like, the way that it worked was you'd have these general assemblies, and the rule was you had to have complete consensus. Well, all the moderates, they went to work during the day. So in the middle of the day when everyone's at work, the communists had consensus, and they made all of these rules.
All right, I got to tell you about the consensus. Because we had the same, you know, stuff going on here. And I, all right, we'll compare Occupy stories. And
sure,
you'll get some entertainment audience, I'll tell you. This is how it rolls. We'll be right back.
This is the Liberty Radio Network, broadcasting the latest liberty-oriented audio content 24 hours a day at LRN.fm.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Protest! Anti-war protest. Any protest. I wonder how effective that was. You know, I mean, it definitely showed that there's somebody, you know, not happy with whatever, but...
I don't think it's effective at all anymore.
Yeah.
I think they've seen it as a tactic, and they've come up with their response to it, which is to surround it by police and then ignore it. And it's not an effective strategy anymore because you're fighting the last war.
Right. See, that's what we always go, you know, when you're dealing with a state or legislators, activists, whatever, they're always fighting the last war. They use the tactics from what may have been moderately successful last time.
Right.
You got to come up with some new tactics.
So people see the success of Vietnam War protesting and they think, well, this must be how you protest war. And as a result, they're protesting the last war and they are using a tactic that the government just doesn't care about anymore and doesn't respond to anymore.
I'm wondering if the distribution of information... Well, okay, I'll give you an example. I did want to talk about this consensus, Occupy, and get into Occupy, and we'll talk some Occupy. Because Davi and I are going to be hanging all day here, so we got plenty of time. We'll get to it, make notes here, and we'll... Then you got to listen to the whole freaking show, because we got a lot of stuff to share. But when we saw Sir No Sir last night, that was kind of... massive protests, Vietnam, soldiers coming out together, and, you know, with the people, the youth, they're just, you know, telling the truth, the Winter Soldier series. They repeated that for Iraq. I remember, you know, Adam was involved in that.
It is not what they teach you in school, I'll tell you that.
Oh, you mean the movie?
I had never even heard of the GI movement. When we studied Vietnam, even in college, the prevailing narrative was that the people protested and they spit on soldiers and called them baby killers, and that Nixon responded to public pressure from these civilian protests. There was no mention of a GI movement, and
that they weren't fighting it in Vietnam, and that's why they went to an air war.
Right. Like that was not even from like liberal professors teaching U.S. history in college. Like, I thought this was where we were supposed to be learning the
They learned from whatever they were told by somebody said if they controlled the learnifying.
And the documentary suggests that this spitting on soldiers thing, which is like the defining moment of whatever. Like, I've heard this since I was a little kid that people spit on soldiers coming home. Didn't
happen.
San
Francisco, because you lived there. That was the thing.
I know this, the Presidio. What is that building called?
Presidio?
Not just the Presidio, but the Presidio prison where they kept the GI soldiers and where the protests were.
Yeah,
the stock room, the stock house, whatever.
Yeah,
I don't know.
The Presidio prison.
I know that building. That building is right where they host the Walker Stalker Con San Francisco now.
Oh, that's why you said that. You go, I know that building.
Right.
I've zombied that building.
Yeah, so not that building, but the buildings next to it are like these long sort of... I don't know, they are like bunkers or something, right? And so they use those, they rent those out for convention space now. But the cool thing about Walker Stalker Con being in that building is they've still got old decommissioned military buildings. So you get these people out there when they're like zombie costumes and their survivor gear and all this stuff, like doing photo ops on these like old tanks and stuff. It's pretty cool, but... that history is completely unknown, and the fact that that spitting on soldiers thing, there's no confirmed account of that ever even happening, is like, all history is propaganda.
Yep. Wow.
And it's because they want the prevailing myth to be that the civilians were against the soldiers, because they don't want current soldiers to get in their head that they get to protest too. They want to bury the GI movement because they don't want current soldiers thinking that that's their role in the war.
Hold on, we got Karen calling. Go see if she can do the next hour. If she wants to do that, or we can just put her on now. If her time is.
Let's just put her on and hold her as long as we can keep her.
Yeah, okay. Hey, Karen?
Yeah, hey, I'm here. I'm sorry I didn't hear any phones ringing, so I've totally forgotten. I was waiting on a call, and I just got carried away with other things.
Slacktivist. You know, this is... Well, that's good. I mean, how late can you go? I mean, we got one set. We could do the next hour. We could just go until you're boring, or what?
Oh, yeah. Well, that might be a short one.
All right. We'll go.
I'm bored.
Well, I'll tell you. I'll just
say...
I've already introduced you to the audience, and I wanted to go ahead, and we'll just do that again real quick. We're on the air now. We got Davi Barker from Bitcoin Not Bombs in. And we're just hanging here. We're looking forward to talking to you. Last night, we watched Sir No Sir, the Vietnam movie about how the GIs stopped it. Have you ever seen that movie?
No, I haven't. You've mentioned it before, and I still haven't watched it.
Selectivist. I am telling you. This is, it had a big impact on Diane. Anybody I have, you know, that watches that, you know, of course, and he was thinking of Why We Fight that you were in.
Yeah, I have a copy of Why We Fight.
You know, so that, well, Karen Katowski is a PhD, retired United States Air Force Lieutenant Colonel, writes for Lou Rockwell, blogs occasionally at Liberty and Power, The Beacon. She ran for Congress in Virginia's 6th District, and she was in the Pentagon. You know, she was there when, you know, whatever hit it, and she was there during, you know, Rumsfeld-Cheney doing their whatever the hell they were doing. And, you know, the one thing, I went from memory to tell the story. You were writing for Colonel Hackworth's site, but as under a pseudonym, a male pseudonym, and it was, I can't remember the name of his site, Military Weekly or something. What was it called?
Soldiers for the Truth is what he had.
Really?
Truth, yep. Yep, he had that site, and it did run a long time before I started writing for it, and he had me as Notes from the Underground, deep Pentagon Deep Throat kind of thing. But, yes, anonymous, because even though I didn't put out any classified information, I sure should have, but I didn't. What I did do was criticize harshly, you know, what was going on there in 2002 and early 2003. And so ever since I was still active duty, had those public criticisms, you know, I would have gotten in big trouble. So he knew that more than I did, even. And he protected my identity during that time. And it's not like I gave out, I mean, you know, just one small voice is all I really had. And I think it was helpful for people to see that there was somebody inside the Pentagon who felt and understood what was going on. But I don't put myself in any, I was never unduly punished. After I retired and it became known I went public with my name, you know, okay, fine. So I didn't get my retirement medal. That is really, honestly, not very bad of a punishment, since I didn't really want it anyway.
There's a retirement medal? What does that mean?
Well, you know, when you retire and have a big ceremony and they give you your some sort of meritorious service or whatever.
There's a ceremony? I mean, so normally you missed out on a ceremony from the government for being a good soldier. There's a ceremony.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, sure.
And was it just for you, or they lined up and 40 other retiring people?
Yeah, individually. But what I'm saying is, I mean, I didn't whistleblow that much. I just said my opinion. It was a critical opinion. It was a critical observation.
No, that was the whistleblow. See, the thing is all the details. They'd love if you did details. Then they could get you for details. You just giving an opinion that these guys are messed up like polio. Then they're going, no, you're not allowed to break ranks.
Yeah, that's true. And it is helpful for people, because so many other people inside and outside the Pentagon felt the way I did but couldn't speak for whatever reason. And so I spoke for them, I think. And that was helpful, but I don't put myself... I mean, they're trying to kill Julian Assange. They're trying to kill Ed Snowden. They put National Security Council folks and State Department folks, they try to put them in jail for what they've done. And all they've done is not much more than I did. So I feel very fortunate that they didn't, you know, they didn't ruin my life. Cybele Edmonds, I mean, my goodness. You know, they classified her life. They said, oh, you're classified. The classified woman, she wrote a book about it. I mean, you talked to Cybele.
Yeah, no, we had her on. You know, this is, but with you, I always got the impression that you skated. You know, that they were like, you know, Karen, you know, she's a little too philosophically astute and kind of got some rhetoric. God, we don't want that tar baby on. I mean, you know, I just kind of got the impression they just said, you know what? We just leave her alone.
Yeah.
All right, more Karen Katowski. She can go in next hour. She hang with us. You know, Davi and I got some good conversation going. We want to get into the deep state.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what the readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. FreedomsPhoenix.com constantly providing the information, the real news about government policies, and the real relationship we all have with the coercive government. The real condition of the economy, innovations in technology, breakthroughs in energy, health, and computer science. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media. The corporate media, nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but now there's an alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com. Constant news updates on the issues that affect your life in the most important ways. With liberty and property under constant attack, FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda, and it encourages the participation of its readers. Go to FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com. The revolution between the years has already happened.
Okay, Karen, when we come back, I want to get into your article. We talked about it a little bit, but the we can walk through that, and that'll get us probably eat up this segment. Then we got an 8-minute break, and then we'll go into the next hour if you're available.
Yeah, I can do that. I can do some of the next hour for sure, yeah.
All right, well, that's what we'll do.
Okay, yeah, I got to go look at that article so I can remember what I wrote.
Can the deep state be cured?
Not unless they acknowledge that they're sick.
Or that there is a deep state. Okay, go ahead and we'll do deep state. What's that? You know, and then some of the things that influenced you and our latest news and freaking Libya, man. You know, I have Scott Horton come on every Friday, and every other Wednesday I have James Corbett. And, you know, between those two, that's about all I can take. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. It's too much.
I'm good. But the... Yeah, and this election's like, next hour, we are definitely going to get us some, you know, Clinton, Trump, Weld, Johnson, whatever the hell, Stein, something. And I'm just, how's this Weld thing on your blood pressure?
Oh, yeah. Well, I haven't followed what specifically, but I don't, he's never been my guy. I mean, I don't know what the libertarians are doing.
You know, I was at the national convention. And it was very interesting to see the factions in play.
Uh-huh.
And maybe at the top of the hour break, I'll tell you all about it. You know, it was you'd appreciate it more than most. But yeah, I could see what's coming. You know, all right, here we're coming back.
Okay.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free.
And Avi Barker and Karen Katowski.
I want to break free from your lies.
Break it free from the lies. Uncovering the secrets, exposing the lies. You know, that's one thing that is kind of the commonality between, you know, friends and associates and fellow activists and so on that we work with. It's that's kind of the theme. You know, I'm just... you just can't let a lie go. And I'm, you know, Karen, how true is that with you? I mean, is that something that you're just, I'm not, you know, buying into this?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. It's, there's a lot of lies going on there. That's kind of like what I was writing about, I think, with this, the deep state thing. I mean, I was kind of just musing, you know, like always, about the situation that this country is in and that our politics are in. And I always try to look at something, you know, what's positive and what can save the country. And everybody's looking for something to save the country, but really it is fundamental truth. Fundamental truth will, you know, if enough people grasp it, if everything else falls away pretty quickly.
If they could grok government.
Yeah.
They could understand government. Okay, so the deep state, define that for us. When you say deep state, you're talking... What? Shadow government? They, them, those? I mean, what does that mean?
Well, there's people have written whole books on it. It kind of seems to be a newer term, or at least it's coming into popularity.
Yeah, I've never heard it before.
You have?
I don't think so. Other than this article, I don't think I've ever heard it.
I know Lou Rockwell in the past several years has been increasingly featuring books and articles which talk about this concept of a deep state. But what it is it's something that we, you know, when we say, like, hey, we get a Republican administration in, we get a Democratic administration in, but nothing changes.
Yeah.
It's kind of distance. You know how they say, like, well, it's like a big ship, you know, it can't be moved very quickly. Well, that is true for ships. But when we see that in terms of society and government and society together, you have to ask, well, what is driving it all? What is motivating and moving this government that we have? Now, we know it's growing. Government's grown. You can look at the numbers. It's growing massively. It continues to grow. And some of that is just bureaucratic, you know, bureaucratic tendencies. Like, if I'm in charge of five people, I want to be in charge of six people. You know, if I'm in charge of 500, I want to be in charge of 1,000. This growth in the bureaucracy, unrestrained by the Constitution. So all these people, I love Constitution, but seriously, it has done nothing to restrain government. Just like the famous anarchists, you know, the Constitution has either prescribed the government that we have, or it has been powerless to restrain it. So or to prevent it. Lysander Spooner said that, I'm paraphrasing, but I mean, and that was in the late 1800s, so he, you know, this has been going on for quite a long time. So why does it continue to grow? Why does it have this power that we don't seem to be able to stop? And so we say, well, that entity must be the deep state. The deep state is a live creature, you know, it's something that controls its own destiny, and we don't. This is kind of, in my view, what we're talking about with the deep state.
So it's kind of, for me, it's like if you mix sulfuric acid and sugar, all of a sudden you get this carbon column that just pops up every time, you know? There's
It's kind of hard, right? Kind of can't do much with it once it forms.
Yeah, no, I remember in high school, it was an experiment. They did sophomore year. They had sulfuric, you know, really powerful, you know, pure, you know, probably more than what you'd go buy for the pool. But it was, right. You know, sulfuric acid and sugar, and she stirred it, and you sat back, and about 10 seconds later, it's like a 3-foot-high column in this beaker just shot up of carbon.
Yeah.
And I go,
that's right.
Wow.
I think that's a good analogy, and anybody, now I don't know if they do that in school anymore, because it's probably...
Yeah, no, that would be, you know, you'd learn something, but, you know, the point that I got from that is if you mix certain things, you know, it's like predictable what will happen. If you mix political and real power and human beings, this is what happens every time.
Yeah, right. It's a feature, it's not a corruption.
Right.
The thing about that experiment is you can't change that carbon back into what it started with. And I think this is the real, probably the debate about the deep state. Is it a permanent change that cannot be, you know, power is concentrated, it's irresistible, and it can't be turned back into a decentralized, self-governing entity. Once it changes, it can't be changed back. Or is it more of a living, transitional thing that is like a pendulum currently at one side, but it could swing back, and, you know, is it changeable? And I think that would probably be, if there were two sides on the critiquing the deep state, one would say it's unchangeable, it can't be fixed, and then the other side would say it is transitory, even, I can't think of the word, ephemeral, okay? It's even ephemeral, possibly. Maybe it looks really strong and solid, maybe it's not. And I have to tell you, I am of the mind, I'm not the expert on the deep state, but I do think it is way more ephemeral than we think it is, and I'll tell you why, because it's made out of human beings, and those rats will jump the ship. They're jumping it now.
Sure.
And when the rats jump, now look, what would make the rats jump? Well, if they stopped printing money, if we audited the Fed, many rats would say, oh my Lord, there's better cheese on the other side, let's go, and they would be gone. If the hands of power that the state, the government, and the corporate, we're talking about, you know, corporate capitalism, which is another word for corporate capitalism, you know, it's fascism. We're not allowed to use that word, but it is fascism. We have corporate capitalism in this country, crony capitalism, corporate capitalism, big companies connected to government and politicians who make their own rules. I mean, you know, I don't know if you've talked, I know you've talked about Monsanto before, but the way Monsanto kind of has a revolving door with the FDA and the Department of Agriculture. I mean, this is what we're talking about here. This is like the deep state. But what could change it? I mean, seriously, if the benefits aren't there, human beings will not be there.
You know, I think the biggest thing for me is and all the focus and effort and activism that we do and everything is for one thing. What is the most powerful thing up against the deep state. It's just public opinion. It's just when they go, you know, you suck and I'm over here now. I'd rather go, you know, whatever. And I'm going, once that happens, it's over.
That's
but managing public opinion
that's
is
exactly
such a huge part of it.
If, you know, it's one thing for a farmer to have his sheep and his cows, and he runs them here and he runs them there and he harvests them and they make money. And sheep and cows, you know, every once in a while you get one that jumps the fence, but for the most part, we are in control of them. But human beings, contrary to popular opinion, you know, we're not sheep and we're not cows. We're not cattle for the state. We're not sheep of the government. We actually can think and learn and evaluate. We can understand history. Sheep can't understand history. You know, they really can't. They don't have a, you know, they don't have a perspective on history, but human beings do. We care about things making sense. We care about justice. And so we are really difficult to maintain in any long period of time as sheep. And that's what's allowed the rise of
one thing that I'm afraid of, Karen, is that I agree with you. And they have to physically, you know, change us. Human beings have to be altered. This model of human just ain't taking the program, damn it. You know, we gotta alter them. We gotta vax them, brain dead them in front of the television, get them to play Pokemon Go, something. I mean, we got, you know, gotta tell you, okay, we got plenty of time. We got like a minute here. Davi, you gotta tell her about the graveyard Pokemon Go thing.
Oh,
this is a great psychological
thing. This is bizarre. I don't know if you've come across this Pokemon Go game, but it has radically transformed human behavior like pretty instantaneously.
Wow.
So
I think it's kind of waning already, but you know.
I have a friend and I, like, when we visit, we live on opposite sides of the country, but whenever we visit each other, we like to take a walk in a graveyard because it's kind of like a walk in the park, except there's nobody around. It's a nice garden. There's often sort of interesting graves, and you can even pick up a little history if you read them. But the last time that we did this, we went to Arlington Cemetery, and there were dozens of people around, just like staring at their phones, like a group of people all walking the same direction, staring at their phone, and then all turning at the same time and walking the other direction. Like, no communication. Like, it's like this network effect.
Goodness.
And it's because they're chasing Pokemon. Now, this got so overwhelming that police came to the graveyard and started kicking people out and set up a guard at the gate to say, you can't play Pokemon Go here.
It's like we're all zombies. You know,
yeah,
this is I was like, holy crap. And this is from, you know, Davi Barker's the one. I don't know if you ever saw it. He wrote the article Authoritarian Sociopathy. And it's kind of like, you know, this groupthink of how you, you know, worship badges and lab coats and all that kind. And it was just a fantastic
this
article.
This is a different thing. This is like a Skinner box.
But it's kind of, you know, the psychology of humans, how it can be used.
Yeah.
And I'm going, when you sit there and you, having written this or even read it, and then watch this happen, and a bunch of zombies, literally, you know, they're zombified. They might as well just had a mask on as they're going around looking at their screen, and then they all turn left and go that way. They banged a gong. Okay, we'll go ahead and take a break here real quick. We come back at 6 after, and then we'll just get started fresh.
Okay, sounds good.
All right.
Sounds good.
See you in a little bit.
Yep.
More Declare Your Independence is coming up next, live, after the news, here on the Liberty Radio Network, LRN.FM.
From Keene in the Shire, the Liberty Media capital of the world, this is Daryl W. Perry, host of FPP Radio News for Wednesday, August 24th, 2016. Silver is trading at $18.91 per ounce. Gold is valued at $1,338 per ounce. And according to BitcoinAverage.com, the average price of Bitcoin is $587. Antiwar.com reports, repeatedly demanded by Turkey for a solid month, the U.S. has finally confirmed a formal request for the extradition of exiled cleric Fethullah Gulen, but they say the request had nothing to do with Turkey's month of repeated claims that he was the ringleader in the failed July military coup. That does not clarify things a lot, since Gulen has been blamed for materially everything that's gone wrong in Turkey since he split with the ruling party, and the State Department statements did not shed any additional light, saying only it is obvious obviously related to other reasons for which they want him extradited for. Previous indications were that Turkey sent a substantial series of documents in seeking Gulen, but that it had included no evidence of his involvement in the coup. Despite this, Turkish officials have repeatedly and publicly insisted they wanted him extradited because of the coup. The U.S. Justice Department sent agents to Turkey earlier this week to gather their own evidence related to the potential extradition of Gulen. This has led to the assumption that the U.S. extradition would be largely based on what they are able to dig up on Gulen and not Turkey's own allegations. For nearly 40 years, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has been a trusted source for buying and selling precious metals like gold and silver. They also take Bitcoin for precious metal purchases and have permanently removed the minimum purchase amount for all orders paid in the digital currency. Call Roberts & Roberts today for knowledgeable advice on buying and selling precious metals and a forward-thinking approach to new technologies. 800-874-9760 or visit online at rrbi.co. UPI reports a federal appeals court on Tuesday said police officers cannot stop and search vehicles belonging to out-of-state motorists simply because of where they reside, including states where cannabis is legal. By a 2-1 vote, the 10th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in Denver said two Kansas Highway Patrol officers violated the constitutional rights of Colorado motorist Peter Vasquez in December 2011 by pulling him over and searching his car after he had been driving alone at night on Interstate 70. The officers relied heavily on the residency of Vasquez to justify the search, which uncovered nothing illegal, saying Colorado was a known drug source where cannabis is legal. But the court said that would justify searching motors from the 25 U.S. states that permit cannabis for medical use and the four states, including Colorado plus Washington, D.C., where recreational use is allowed. Circuit Judge Carlos Lucero wrote, "It is time to abandon the pretense that state citizenship is a permissible basis upon which to justify the detention and search of out-of-state motorists, and time to stop the practice of detention of motorists for nothing more than an out-of-state license plate." The decision revived the civil lawsuit by Vasquez, who is seeking damages from officers Richard Jimerson and Dax Lewis for violating his Fourth Amendment rights against unreasonable searches. A lower court judge had dismissed the case in 2014. The Chief Justice of the Tenth Circuit Court dissented, saying the case was a close call, but that a reasonable officer might have thought Vasquez's travel plan suspicious and the search acceptable. Jennifer Rapp, a spokeswoman for the Kansas Attorney General Derek Schmidt, said he intends to ask the entire appeals court to review the panel's decision. If you're fed up with the government running every aspect of your life, but you're not listening to the Lava Flow podcast yet, what's wrong with you? Go right now to thelavaflow.com/listen. The Lava Flow Podcast, channeling the flow of information to the libertarian, anarcho-capitalist, voluntarist, and agorist community. Subscribe today using any podcatcher at thelavaflow.com/listen, or just go back to sucking up to the government. The Lava Flow Podcast, striking the root every episode. Reuters reports a U.S. Labor Board decided Tuesday that student assistants at private colleges and universities are considered employees of the school, which means they have the right to unionize if they wish. The National Labor Relations Board voted 3-1 in a case involving assistants at Columbia University in New York City who petitioned to join a labor union nearly 2 years ago. In its decision, the panel effectively acknowledged that graduate assistants are covered under federal labor law because there is no clear language in the National Labor Relations Act that prevents their right to unionize. The ruling reverses a 2004 decision involving Brown University that the National Labor Relations Board said deprived an entire category of workers of the protections of the act without a convincing jurisdiction. The decision remands the matter to the board's Manhattan office for further review. This has been FPP Radio News, online at fppradio.com.
Tomorrow's my big day. I'm going to go in for surgery, and hopefully you'll come along. Now, I do have to admit that I am in a bit of pain, so I'm really looking forward to this procedure. I think we're both going to find out that having surgery just isn't as scary as it sounds.
We're covering our own Jim Haggerty's kidney stone removal surgery, and his surgery is now just minutes away. So, Dr. Atkins, tell us what precautions we would take to prevent us from getting kidney stones.
Always stay hydrated. Water helps the kidneys break the stuff down.
Hear that, Jim? More water.
What?
More water. Maybe we should replace your coffee.
Please go away.
That's a camera they're going to use to film the whole surgery from inside Jim's body,
Yes, that's
going to
be pushed into Jim's urethra as well. Now, normally they wouldn't do this. This is purely for the benefit of us watching it on TV.
All right, stick with us, because first he's going to pop into the children's ward to cheer up some youngsters suffering from terminal illnesses.
This is the Onion News Network.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah. Out of fear. Unafeared. Davi Barker sitting in, and along with Karen Katowski, definitely unafeared individuals. You know, that's one thing, Karen, I just want to get from your perspective. You know, I never got the impression of, from any of the writings, or you're coming out and in the Pentagon and talking about and outing these guys in the writing that you do, that you're afraid. I never got that impression, other than you fear for, you know, America. And, why? I mean, is it from an understanding, you know, of what you go, yeah, you know, there they go again. I mean, you know, I didn't get the impression you were fearful of anything. Where did that come from?
Well, back in 2003, I didn't follow all the actions, like the dirty actions that the state takes against its own people. And, you know, this was pre some of the things that have happened since then. But I will say this, I've had this conversation before about female whistleblowers, which we see that they're almost equally represented. You know, that there is as many females, if not more, who have boldly come forward and said the truth about government or business or whatever that needs to be whistleblown. And I think there's a sociology. Women do not, this is a generalization, but for the most part, women have a more connections with family, society, and work. It's more balanced. It's not like their work is their whole identity. With a lot of men, especially men that are aged 60 and 70 right now, work for them and their generation was everything for them. So when they whistleblew or turned for the truth, but maybe against some of the wrong things that were being done that they were whistleblowing against, whether it's government or their employer or whatever, they were rejecting almost everything that their life was built around. Whereas when women whistleblow, they're telling the truth for their children, and that's it. And that is the most important thing you can do. And, of course, many men join in this view today. I think the newer generation understand it's about your connections. It's about your family. It's about your community and your country. It's not about government or your particular job. But in my generation, in our generation, and some people that are older than us, females can tell the truth more with less of a loss of their identity, because we are doing it for our children and our nieces and our nephews, and that's very clear, and that's also socially acceptable, at least it was. And I think today it's socially acceptable for all men to take care of their families and their communities and their friends, and less loyalty to institutions. And that's a good thing. That's a good progression, and it coincides with, of course, the technological IT revolution, where we can actually find out information in nearly real time, so it's all wonderful. But yeah, for me, I didn't think I was risking that much, and truly, I didn't get my eyes open until I was just about ready to retire. So I was able to retire. That, you know, a lot of people criticize me for that. Well, you know, it happened in that way, and I'm glad that it did, because it did give me some economic liberty. And certainly, I was not like most of the guys I worked with who, as soon as they retired, would come back in the civilian seat of the job they just did, working either for the DOD or for a contractor or another government agency. I didn't want that. I didn't ask for that. Had I wanted it and asked for it, I would have been denied it. But since I didn't want it, nothing was taken from me, and I didn't have to fear that economically I would not be able to survive. Because also, I stepped down. Well, I never did have a really high lifestyle, but my lifestyle stepped way back, and I was willing to. I mean, I wanted to go dig in the dirt and grow carrots, you know? I mean, I said, hey, this is what I want to do, and it didn't cost me a huge amount of money to do that. I didn't need to have...
Your priorities were different. You know, that's what, you know, do you have children?
Yeah, I got 4 kids and 8 grandkids. Yeah,
I have 10 grandchildren. I win.
Oh, wow. You beat me, then. I gotta get these kids to work.
Yeah, get them going. You know, this is, I've said this before. It's been years that we've known each other. And, you know, I'm just impressed with your husband. I mean, you know. I to put up with all the kind of, you know, what's his role in your family on all this? And the fact that you still write and everything, he's like, oh, Karen, yeah, whatever, you know, I'll watch that. You can finish your article, and then we'll go to dinner or something.
That's right, yeah. He is fantastic, you know, he really is. And I always keep telling him, well, he tells me, you know, you got every dream you ever wanted because we now live in the country, and that is what I wanted. But then I tell him, but you got every dream you wanted, too, because I told you what your dreams were.
It's me, baby.
He actually, you know, he was an Eagle Scout back in the day before the Boy Scouts became what they are. He was an outdoorsy type person, survival-oriented, you know, like the camp. And I think in many ways, you know, we were well-matched, and he has gotten a lot of the things that he would have liked to have. But, yeah, certainly nobody would have asked for some of this stuff. I mean,
your insulation? Why do you think they didn't, you know, like, put you in jail or go out? I mean, I just got the impression that from your articulation of your position and, you know, your research on your articles and that, you know, the truth that you're saying, they go, you know, we don't want to go up against Karen. We just know and be prudent at this juncture.
I'd like to think that that was part of it, but the fundamental thing is they wouldn't have a case, and it would have cost them way more. And again, this is why they don't go after a lot of people. You know this whole idea of insurance that guys like Ed Snowden and Julian Assange have?
Yeah, they got like a dead man switch or something on stuff.
That's right. Well, you know, the government, the deep state, you want to call it that, the government, to the extent that it's controlled by the deep state, I mean, these guys don't want to waste resources any more than anybody else, unless it enriches them. And they really would like just everybody to shut up. And they can't just attack everybody, and they lose cases. I mean, you guys have followed, I know you know about the Rutherford Institute here in Charlottesville.
Yeah, John Whitehead.
Yeah, and he writes a lot of stuff, and of course he does a lot of pro bono work for people all over the country who are fighting back against the government abuse of power, whether it's IRS or the DEA or FBI, whoever it is that's come around snatching people up, you know, arresting people for free speech and all the stuff that they do. And guess what? He wins his cases because the government doesn't have a leg to stand on. He wins his cases.
Well, before they didn't care. Now it's there's enough resources or attention or internet or something that you know they don't win the PR battle, which is what it's really about anyway. It's all
always about,
that.
Because just like these Pokemon people, Pokemon Go. Okay, I don't play the game, but those people, while they're walking in an orderly fashion, following the commands of some great Pokemon Go in the sky, they don't think they're doing that. They think that they're enjoying themselves doing what they want to do. And yeah. I'll tell you, I guarantee you, if their access to Pokemon Go is shut down, or they can't get on their cell phone. I mean, you know what happens when electricity goes out, and when the towers go out or whatever, and software problems, people can't get access to their internet or their cell phone. They go freaking ballistic. They go nuts because they're addicted to it, but they don't think they're being controlled. And I'll tell you, so it's a double-edged sword. You know, we have this technology that links people and preoccupies them maybe in some ways so they don't pay attention to what their government's doing and they accept it. At the same time, if you deny them their entertainment, they will go on the street in 2 seconds. People are just not patient. And this is not good for the government because there's still 10 times, 100 times more of us than there is in government people. And people are with their little cameras. My God, that's really offended the government, that their people, their workers can be filmed.
You know, when we come back, I want to talk about that very, you know, point you're leading up to, is that, you know, now what? I mean, what's the power that we have now? People just got used to having an opinion, you know, during the, like, the revolution years, that it was an education thing. Now what?
This is Donna Hancock with Silver Alliance.
You know, that's what we'll talk about. You know, Davi was young, you know, it's 03, the big protest, anti-war protest in the spring of 03, you know, more people in the street than at the peak of the Vietnam kind of thing. And it was, he was at San Jose, and he goes up to, tell her that story real quick. With the police
officer. I was a young guy, and me and a group of other sort of college students that fancied ourselves sort of radical or something, we decided to block traffic, which was not part of the sort of structured protest. And I don't condone this behavior anymore, but, so I'm laying in the middle of the street, and a cop comes up to me and starts screaming that he's going to arrest me if I don't get out of the street. And so I say to him, I'll tell you what, I will get out of the street if you come with me and leave the protest and let me buy you a cup of coffee and talk. And he did. So he and I left the protest and went to a local coffee shop and sat, and I explained to him why I was against the war. And it turns out that he was also against the war, and so we had a conversation about, you know, what are you doing with your life? Why are you out here protesting a thing that you're, or preventing a thing that you're also against? But so that's interesting.
Yeah, you know, and you wonder if you follow up that he was like in his mid 30s or something.
Yeah, I don't know where he is now.
Experiences or whatever, but it's opinion. It's always just opinion, and why I always focus on it's just opinion. And I your opinion on everybody's opinion is, in my opinion, relevant to everybody's opinion. So I want to, when we come back, the other thing we watched, that, you know, Sir No Sir, and Davi made a comment that, you know, it was, you know, heavily emphasizing race. You know, like black men go, hey man, no Vietnamese is calling me, you know, names, and I'm, why am I fighting? I'm not your slave, you know, fight the white man's war or so on. Then you look at Charlie Sheen in Platoon or whatever, and the white men that went over, you know, because I'm America, and, you know, and they volunteer and stuff. And then how does that change them? And are the, you know, Appalachian poor white kid, is he now, you know, a slave? And then and one comment one of the guys made, he goes, yeah, they're doing the gook this and the gook that. He goes, I didn't know it was a slang or derogatory name, a word. And he goes, after a while, he goes, oh, I get it. You know, gook is the same as, you know, what they call me. And I'm going, oh. So he's, this opinion, this information. And so, of course, they're going to be using the internet to try and counter all of that. And I'm wondering how. You know, I mean, what is the, what do we got to defend against? And when you ran for Congress, you know, I'm wondering, when you're out in the street and you're talking to people, what was the most influential opinion, you know, the mechanism of addressing this? I mean, is it politics? Are we're gonna get freed by Trump or something? I mean, you know, it's just, so when we come back, I want to get from your perspective of the power of opinion inside the military and what you think might be the most effective. Is it slinging around DVDs at, you know, protest, or is it ignoring them or raising horses or what?
Yeah, good question.
All right, well, that's what we'll do. We'll be back in about 30 seconds, and we'll kind of get into that. I'll get you going, and then we'll just go, you know, sit back and listen to Karen.
Okay.
All right, we'll be right back.
What's up next? Visit the Liberty Radio Network program guide to find out at shows.lrn.fm. That's shows.lrn.fm.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
And we're right back with Karen Katowski. I wanted to, you know, reintroduce you. She, you know, kind of flowed over from the first hour. Lieutenant Colonel Karen Katowski worked in the Pentagon during the, you know, Office of Special Plan Cheney-Rumsfeld, and she's outing them on the internet and had an opinion. And I remember we were reading your stuff on Colonel Hackworth's site, And it was Charles Goyette was really big on this, and when I was producing for him, and then you retired and came out, and ha, it's Karen, you know, and then we, you know, got to know each other, and then of course you became part of the opinion making throughout. You wrote a lot on Lou Rockwell and other places, and your opinion is from inside has, you know, really been important. And during, I think it was probably the 10 campaign, you ran for Congress. You know, you're a big supporter of Ron Paul and so on, and you ran, and you got a lot from inside the military, from the media, from the campaign trail, from the Levolution, from, you know. And one thing that I wanted to talk about is that we watched a Sir No Sir documentary last night, and Davi made the point that there was a lot of racial things in there, but it was mainly, you know, the black community was like, look, we're not your slaves, you know, and I'm wondering about, you know, the white guys. I mean, I go, hey, I don't want to be your slave either.
Yeah, there was a focus on the Black Panthers and some other specifically African-American groups, both in the GI movement and among civilians. And it reminded me a lot of Black Lives Matter, in especially when they showed these clips of, like, meetings of these groups. Like, they would say things. Well, the one that really got me was the guy says, should black people even be enrolling in the military, because I only want to fight where I'm oppressed, and I'm not oppressed in Vietnam, I'm oppressed right here. And I'm thinking, that is a perfect argument for a white person not to join the military. Yeah. Like, why is this a segmented argument? Like, why isn't he saying that to a mixed audience who all need to hear it? And this is like a frustration that I have. Like, that I understand that there's a disparity of impact on African Americans, and that's why they sort of come together and they share their, you know, grievances together. But their arguments are just as valid for any race. Like, I feel like they would be more effective if they were saying these
trying
things
to free
to
the
everyone.
White people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they need, so what you're saying, they need a broader audience for this same message, because it applies beyond, race, certainly behind beyond the African-American experience, even though it's totally legitimate, you know, for that. I mean, they do own that, I think, to some extent. That's owned, and maybe there's a, you don't want to share, you know, but the Internet lets us share, and these arguments are valid. You know, there's a big, there's a book that I read about on Lou Rockwell and other places. I haven't read the book yet, but I want to, and it's called Hillbilly Elegy. Have you heard of that book yet?
Uh-uh.
Anyway, the guy, he's a Yale graduate, but he's one of the, but he grew up in southern Ohio in the northern Appalachians and meth country, basically. I mean, it was meth country where he grew up, and he was, his mom was a drug dependent. White guy. He's writing about hillbillies, so he's writing about poor white trash. I mean, I think it's legitimate to use that term. I adhere to that. You know, and he's talking about their experience and being basically the conditions that they live in, and the sense of being deprived of the American dream, part of it due to economic changes, and part of it due to the drug war, you know, part of it due to a lot of things, breakdown of community. But it's the same things that Patrick Moynihan wrote about in the 60s and 70s about what welfare had done to urban black families and communities, you know, devaluing the father. In these communities, and you know, you're still hearing this argument today, and it's much more substantiated because we see that, you know, the war on poverty hasn't anything but increased poverty and make things worse, and that is covering white, you know, it's not really, yeah, race matters, but we've got a lot of white slaves in this country, and I honestly believe that the support that Trump, the kind of the strings that Trump is playing, the sounds that he's making are resonating with white folks who are poor and feel like they can't get ahead, they can't achieve the American dream. What they had has been gradually lost and taken away, and they don't have freedom and liberty. And really, that's what it's all about. You know, the whole anti-slavery movement, whether it was from abolitionists or slaves themselves, was about freedom. That's what people got. You got, you know, Ernest, this is like what you talk about all the time. Freedom is this thing that motivates people, a desire for freedom. We need to own ourselves. Do we have autonomy? Can we make our own decisions? Or are we slaves? I mean, it's that simple. And so we have a lot of slaves in this country who don't want to be slaves.
Yeah, but the Libertarian Party is going to free them.
Well, you know, not if...
Oh, you laughed out loud. Why did you do that?
We need an abolitionist
party.
You know
why I did that? Because why do they keep picking Republicans? Look, I left the Libertarian Party when they chose Bob Barr. I did not understand that. I thought it was...
See, that was why I never joined the Libertarian Party. Like, I got wrapped up in libertarianism starting up in, like, 2004, and then, like, the Ron Paul campaign in 2008, and I'm like, wow, this libertarianism thing is really cool. Let's have a look at the Libertarian Party. Oh, Bob Barr?
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Next.
No, it was under Reagan towards, well, the last
latter
part of Reagan, I guess, when he got his Alzheimer's or whatever. Then that's when I became... like registered with the libertarians or whatever, but yeah, they Bob Barr, and then after Bob Barr, Johnson, who was a Republican governor. Now this time they've got two Republican governors running on their ticket, and they're both, I mean, I like Johnson a little bit better, but Weld is a progressive New England Republican. That is not a libertarian. How can, you know, I don't understand what they're doing. I know they're trying to get on the ballot, you know, if they can get 10% in all these states and whatnot, and that's fine.
Weld, apparently, like, the headline yesterday was Weld saying, I'm not running as a libertarian, I'm running as myself, which is like, okay.
Yeah, no, this is, I mean, it's a, I mean, I don't know how much this plays into it, but he's council foreign relations guy, you know, and man, if he doesn't, you know, show his stripes in this campaign. And I was at the convention, and he was saying that, he told me, I mean, we're sitting there, he goes, oh, the Libertarian Party, they want me to run for Libertarian Party. And I look around, and I said, you know, these people are not about party. You know, this is about philosophy. I mean, you know, I'm just, you know, FYI, it's not going to be, well, that's what they, not what they told me. And we're going to go, okay, you know, I get it. You know, it was, that was his rationale, is that there was some deal made that with him there, they're going to get enough attention that maybe they'll get in debates, or maybe they'll get more. And they've been getting a lot of attention, but everything that we watch has been, libertarians say this about that. What say you? Oh, we don't say that. What about libertarians say this on that? What say you? We don't say that. I'm going, what the hell good are you?
I know. And you know, they want to poll vote. Look, Hillary is a warmonger. Obama is a warmonger. Bush is a warmonger. You know, these parties, they want war. They depend on war for their money to extract their wealth from the country and put it in other people's pockets. And so they need war. They need tension. They need a big police state to control all of us freedom-loving people. They need that. Both parties want it. McCain wants it. Romney wanted it. They all want this, and this is what they fight for. And so this libertarian scheme is not from the libertarians per se, obviously. I mean,
Before we go to break, I got to tell you this, Karen. I saw Gary Johnson saying something like Mitt Romney would be part of his cabinet.
Yeah.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah. Gary Johnson
wants Mitt Romney.
Oh, it's we're done, man. This is more. Karen Katowski, we come back. Yeah, what do you think of that?
I didn't hear that. That's insane. You know what he's doing?
He's trying to ingratiate himself of, you know, pick me.
Trying to win the Mormon vote? What's he doing?
They want that Republican vote peeled off from Trump.
Yep, for Hillary.
Yeah.
They want Hillary to win. You know, I heard, I mean, it was...
And Weld said, he asked him to go, Trump or Hillary? Oh, Hillary's more qualified.
Yeah, Weld is down for Hillary.
Yeah, kiss of death. Kiss of death. Any libertarian that believes in libertarianism will not vote for that ticket.
Well, that's not what they're counting on.
I know, you're right. They want to pull it. But if those same libertarians vote for... a lot of Republicans hate the Libertarian Party so much that the label will turn them off and they won't be able to vote for Weld and Johnson, and that's fine, too. Maybe they'll just stay home, the ones that don't want Trump. And then many of these libertarians should actively look at who will disrupt the state the most. And there's only one answer to that. There's only one guy that will disrupt the state the most.
Who's that?
It's Trump. Washington hates Trump. Then
because he's only an aspiring warmonger?
You know, I don't know. I get the... We do the Trump report every Thursday, okay?
I honestly don't think that. His language is one thing, but his way of making decisions is way different than the political calculus.
Oh, yeah, it's driven by ego. Ego... Trump wants to go to war because he wants the glory of the one who did it right.
I don't think so.
I don't know. Well, here, let me get this in. Republican presidential nominee Mitt Romney would have a guaranteed spot in his cabinet.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Mitt Romney has not responded.
Yeah. Libertarian presidential nominee Gary Johnson says 2012 presidential nominee Mitt Romney would have a guarantee. I'm wondering who told him to say that. Because somebody had to tell him to say it.
I just can't believe it. I mean, no libertarian in the right mind would vote for them. So
he says it's out of a deep respect for his business acumen.
And Olympics.
You have more respect for damn debt-ridden Trump and his...
Well, hell, that's a Reason .com article.
Yeah.
There's a reason. Yeah. You know, Reason going... Trump reconsidering immigration stance.
Yeah.
Really? Gary Johnson says Romney has a guaranteed spot in cabinet. Child suicide bomber in Turkey kills more than 50 a.m. You know, that's the headline. So wait. What's this? Trump reconsidering immigration stance?
That's like his whole platform.
Yeah,
the
what
wall
the hell
is like is like, well, his billboard. Like,
I don't. I'm voting for Trump. I'm telling you that right now. I'm voting for Trump.
You're still voting?
You're voting for Trump.
Oh, my God. You know,
it's a ceremony.
It's a ceremony. It's a sacrament is what it is. It's the sacrament of the civic religion.
Well, it is a sacrament of the civic religion. However, let's put it this way. I should use Rothbard. I'm rooting for Trump.
Okay? Yeah, I can't say that I'm going to support
him so bad, so scared of him. They hate him. They can't control him. Yeah, you're crazy. But they're all crazy and nuts. I'd rather have his crazy nuts or I would these other guys.
All right, we're going to talk about, you know, Karen Kotowski's endorsement of Trump here when we come back, okay? I can see, you know.
I want to say why I'm rooting for him. I'll tell you why. I'm very honestly feel good about rooting for him. Honestly do.
All right, we're back in 10 seconds. We're gonna get you rooting. Here we go.
Family packs. If you enjoy LRN.FM, please contribute to your favorite shows via their websites and become an amplifier at amp.lrn.fm. That's amp.lrn.fm.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Right back with Karen Kotowski again. I want to, breaking news. This is the breaking news. Karen Kotowski's still voting. help me out with that.
Ceremonial sacrament. I understand it. Yes. Okay. Means nothing. It really doesn't, and the voting is not. But I'll back away from the voting part. I am going to vote ceremony, habit, whatever. But not in the belief that this and that matters. But
so just because you like it?
I use Rothbard's rooting term. I'm rooting for Trump, and it's not because I particularly like him. But I absolutely love, and I'm so excited that he is hated by so many people in Washington and New York, political people. They are scared of him. They hate him. They despise him. You know, we were talking at the break about the Libertarian Party, you know, choosing or being co-opted with two liberal Republicans as their candidates and talking about putting Romney on their ticket, you know, as a Libertarian. This is the... You know, if you want to call it CFR, deep state, this is the outlet for all these Republicans who don't want to vote for Trump. And why don't they want to vote for Trump? Because he's going to mess with their gravy train. And, you know, people say, well, Trump's a big ego guy and he's going to start a war. No, if you look at his language, he's the closest one to an America First type policy of non-intervention. He has said kind things about what Rand Paul ran on.
I don't think he wants to start wars. I think he wants to finish wars.
Finish them. What's the finish? They're done.
He wants the finish? Mission accomplished banner behind his photo. He wants the victory lap. You know.
You know what he wants to do? He wants to say you're fired. These wars were not wars. These wars were not his wars. He wants to end them and take those resources. What he says anyway. Now Trump, being an outsider, has no idea about the depth of the deep state, the power they have over these resources. He thinks, well, you know, I'm going to go and ask for a Pentagon audit. No, it's not going to happen, because you're going to get whacked if you do that. It's not going to happen. And he's going, I'm going to go support an audit of the Fed. No, that's not going to happen either. See, Trump shares an optimism that I'm past, okay? But I like that optimism. I like his idea that government might ought to be accountable, okay? And I think that's what people are attracted to. He's practical. He speaks from the heart. He says stuff all over the place, like most people I know. you know, he's not particularly consistent on a political thing. You know, some people say he's a progressive, he's a fascist, he's a this, he's a that. No, I don't think so. I think he's just a person who uses his brain. You know, I think, you know, if you look at him, what is he? He's 70 years old. Okay, he's lived a life. He wrote his book about, he's run for president twice now. He obviously is serious about it. I think he really wants to serve, and kind of like, you know, Jimmy Carter wanted to serve. Now, Jimmy Carter, we don't hold him up as being a great president, but that was back in the Cold War. You know, we were all, like, about killing Russians, and maybe Jimmy didn't kill as many as he should have. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, but he started off as the, you know, the first trilateral commission ticket with Mondale, the buddies, and...
Jimmy Carter was not anti the deep state, not in any way, shape, or form. He was part of it, and he wanted to be part of it. He was honored to be included. And but see, Trump's not honored to be included. He's honored to be excluded. This is his attitude is what it is. I root for that attitude. I support that attitude that says, I disagree. No, I'm not following your rules. You know, some of the shakeup that he's had in his campaign recently, he was part of his campaign manager. I actually was at a meeting the other day, just recently this week, and talking to some of the Trump campaign people, and the word, this is what they said, and I'm sure it's not news to anybody. But he ran an insurgent primary campaign. Of course, nobody thought Trump would end up being the nominee, but he was.
And Frank Tamburi did, man. He was all over it every Thursday for a year.
Okay. But I mean, you know, the establishment thought they wouldn't have to deal with it. It would be one of their people. And when it wasn't, when after millions, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars are spent on Rubio and Jeb Bush and all these people, they find out, you know, here's this guy that is popular amongst whoever shows up for primaries and caucuses. Okay, that's a small number of total voters, but they ran out there. They got excited about this guy, and it was unexpected. He was an insurgent primary candidate. Now, the RNC then tells him after he's the nominee that him and Pence have got to go follow the RNC rule book, their playbook, and they pull out the old book. And they're having some struggles, and this whole shakeup of last week and this week is a result of him saying, no, I'm running an insurgent presidential campaign. Well, look, I'm all for insurgency. I'm all for throwing out the rule book of politics and doing something different. And I think a lot of people in this country are ready for that. So I don't think now.
Anything different? Like, I want something different too, but I don't want to, like, let's just roll the dice on federal policies. Like, he's a gamble.
He's
a total. Because I still don't even really know what he stands for.
Here's why. 8 years of Obama. If that didn't sink this country, that shows you how not powerful the presidency is. Did they not think that
It just doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter.
The Congress reins him in, well, that's called democracy. I don't think it's going to happen, and I also don't fear that Trump's going to be out of control. But you know what? If you got a president in there that many in Congress, even in his own party, hate, and this guy has this big ego...
Gridlock, yay!
He's going to use the ego to shake up the Congress. If nothing else, it will be entertaining. And that's why I root for him.
I guess that's...
Now,
I am rooting for entertainment. I, you know, if I had to choose between, like, watching a game show where Hillary Clinton was the contestant or watching a game show where Donald Trump was the contestant, I would rather watch the game show where Donald Trump was.
Well, you know, the thing that I'm looking at is the
game
wall.
I'm
sorry?
At the very top, it is a game show. I mean, fundamentally, the deep state will probably... I hate to say this on air. It sounds awful, but it's been said before. But any president that truly challenges the status quo ends up handing over the vice president one way or the other. Whether it's Reagan. Even Reagan did this, you know, after his assassination attempt with the Bush cronies. And seriously, I mean, it was friends of the Bush family that whacked him. So whether that was planned or unplanned, who knows? But we know the Hinckley's long history with the Bushes, and oh my God, what a surprise. Well, but bottom line is, after that happened in his recovery, a lot of his foreign policy, not all of it, but a lot of it was handed over to Bush, to Herbert Walker Bush. So they got what they wanted, and they had the reins on Reagan. And, you know, a lot of people think Reagan's a big warmonger. No, if you study Reagan's personal views, he wasn't a big warmonger. He was greatly opposed to the whole atomic state, the nuclear war, and he took that seriously. And of course, as many people of his generation did, because they remembered in a different way than maybe I do. So, you know, I'm telling you, yes, I don't, the thing I do worry about, and this is, I will say this, the thing I worry about with a Trump presidency is a Pence presidency. I don't know him. He seems kind of loopy to me, but I mean,
you know, this is the impression that I get from this whole thing, covering that as, you know, distantly as I could. The, it seems to me that Trump has kind of got this infrastructure, international business connection, family dynasty. You know, it's not just him to worry about. It's his family.
So, oh, really?
Who's the Trump family?
Yeah, no, I mean, don't you see Ivanka being, you know, running for VP or president in 24 or something? You know?
No, I do not see that at all. I don't think these guys aspire to politics. First off, the
aspire and willing to do are two different things.
Yeah, I don't see that happening. I tell you what, I worry more about that Chelsea's husband and their family that she married into, a bunch of damn crooks. And Chelsea is very clearly going to move into politics. So, you know, I worry about the Clinton dynasty or the Bush dynasty way more than anything like a Trump.
So you think Trump is actively trying to become one of these, like, political families?
I don't think that. Not at
I'm
all.
I'm asking Ernie.
I just seeing that there's the bench is deep. You know, there's more. And even if it wasn't his family, he may need them to keep the empire going so he can support ideology and other people that he thinks would be worthy of you're hired and not fired or something.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you look at Trump, he's got a lot of kids from, who knows, three different wives. I don't know. He's got tons of kids in their 20s and 30s. Only Ivanka and Eric and maybe his other son really seem to be deeply involved in, and qualified to do their business. If he was a nepotism-oriented kind of guy, then all his kids would have jobs, regardless of how unqualified they are. But they don't. Only the qualified ones. Only they really... He's a guy that is used to hiring and firing, not no offense to show, but he actually is used to picking people who can perform in a way that he expects him to perform, and he's not shy about, you know, he makes business decisions. And
music means nothing to Karen.
Do. I mean, you have to be successful. I think that's something to be respected. And certainly, I'm just so sick of Bush Clinton, you know, these rehashes.
Yeah, that is, I'm going, see, this is my thing when, this is what happened. It was the escalator coming down Trump Tower June of last year, 15 or whatever. When he started that, I get a call from a local Republican doctor here that is a good friend, a big Ron Paul supporter. He goes, Ernie, as certain as you were about the Levolution and Ron Paul and what was going to happen with that, I am about Donald Trump. He's going to go all the way with this. If he gets the nomination, if they allow him to get the nomination, he will be president, blah, 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 dollar bets all around. So then his reasoning was, is that he goes, I read his books. I know the type. My father and uncles are all in the high-rise steel fabricate business of structural engineers of whatever out of Philadelphia. They, you know, go to the same Christmas parties or whatever. And he goes, if I'm sitting around the Thanksgiving table, you know, all my uncles are Trump. I mean, you know, it's just I know the mentality. I know the art of the deal. I know how he negotiates. We're going to have a big 50-foot wall, God dang it. I mean, you know, it's just... So he just knew that he was playing and gaming this whole thing from negotiation of strength, you know, from an extreme position of blah, blah, blah.
That's right. And I honestly, you know, there was something on Hannity and people saying, oh, he's softening on immigration. Well, first off, it's totally a good strategy, what he's doing. It's what they all do after they get the nomination.
Yeah, but how's he softening? What did he say? What's his...
Oh, I think he said that we ought to look at letting some people stay here. Well,
okay, we're not going to shoot them all or something?
He's hard over on getting rid of the criminals and the rapists and the robbers and whatnot.
We're going to employ them to build the wall.
Yeah.
They're going to build the wall Americans won't build.
I tell you what, by November, if he gets to be president, even by November as a candidate... this whole wall building thing, it really is just a mem to talk about. You know what it is? It's an idea of security. And people vote, a lot of people don't vote on logic. You know, talk about how to reach people. And I don't understand. I'm more like not emotional. Well, I mean, I get emotional, but I mean, I don't appeal to emotions. I think if the facts are there logically, this is what you have to do, right? This is, I'm thinking this way. that's not how a good half of the population, they go on gut feel, they go on emotional. So when Trump says, I'm going to build a wall, and nobody else is saying that, he's, I'm going to build a wall 100 feet high, it's going to be 200 feet high, 300 feet high. Well, what is he saying? What is he saying? He's not saying, I'm going to build a wall that's ugly and is insane and compromises people's
It'll
private
be a
property.
Resort, a really long resort.
Yes, but what he's saying is, I care about your fear of crime, job loss, whatever. Some of these fears are irrational. Job loss is certainly irrational. People that come across legal or illegal don't take our jobs. Most, especially the illegals. We do import lots of high-tech people, and we export jobs overseas to, that in some ways can hurt certain people's jobs. But guys that come to pick strawberries and cabbages, they think of no American jobs. They know Americans want to do that work. So, and everybody knows it. They work in the slaughterhouses. Why? Because there's not enough 18 and 25-year-old strong men in this country that are willing to put up with those hours and that condition for the low pay. So they're not taking jobs. And so that's the logic. But guess what? That doesn't speak to anybody. He says, I'm going to build a wall so you feel safe. And guess what?
Yeah. All right. You're coming back. Here we go.
FM.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Show must go on. Show must go on. Yeah. Inside my heart is breaking. My makeup may be flaking, but my smile still stays on.
Okay, yeah, we're here smiling, but I tell you, you know that. The show must go on because time marches. You're going to have, just days pass. It's a show, a really big show, being POTUS 2016. And Karen Kotowski is excited. I mean, she's excited. She's excited by a Trump campaign, the Trump president. She's excited because pissing off all the right people, but... I was kind of, I purposely, you're still voting, because I know any time you get excited about it, they still screw you. Every freaking, no matter how it is presented, no matter how much excited, no matter how much they go up against, no matter, and then all of a sudden, from out of the blue, Trump endorses McCain. So I'm going,
yay. That was nuts. Taking the long view. We can be excited about any of these guys if we want to be, and I like the ones that are going to, if I think they're going to tear up the state, if I think they have the right enemies, the same enemies I have in politics, I like that. Now, endorsing McCain, crazy, right? I mean, that's nuts. That's very non-insurgent of him to do that.
Unless.
Unless what?
I don't know. I'm waiting for your unless.
I don't know. Well, unless he really believes in him, which I don't think he does. And I think, I think Trump knows a bully when he sees one, and I don't think he really cares for him. He knows him because he probably has been one, and I think he has no love lost between him and McCain. And in fact, I saw, shortly after that endorsement, that McCain has been guaranteed a position in Hillary's cabinet. So yeah. that makes a lot of sense to me. So this will draw Republicans, and also former NSA director Hayden. He's in a Hillary commercial advocating for Hillary. I mean, this poll...
Well, yeah, Hillary's entire campaign is the whose turn is it? And McCain missed his turn. It was his turn, and Barack Obama messed that up. So the Democrats owe him a turn in an office.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Karen, what is the difference between the two? I mean, I'm when you're looking at the parties, and then and you start to get this Johnson Weld thing, and there was no... I mean, for me to have any kind of, there's a difference, the Green candidate Stein, I mean, is she going to put Romney in her cabinet too or something? I mean, what's the difference?
She's more principled than Johnson.
That's right. I think Stein has way more principles than that. So I don't think she would do that if she was able to get up there. But, I've read, and it could well be, and I certainly hope that it happens, pray for it every day, that the Trump, both the candidacy and possible presidency, will destroy the Republican Party as we have known it. And we'll see a shakeup there.
You know, that I got to tell you this, Karen, interject on that. When I was in Washington, it was 08, and it was the Ron Paul thing, and right before he dropped out in the 08, and they were trying to get the activists to, you know, be all supportive of this Campaign for Liberty thing and all that, and I just didn't have any interest. And I had a couple of guys, they were twin brothers or something from Dallas, or they had car dealers. They had money. They were the money guys behind, you know, a lot of the money behind Dr. Paul. They supported,
oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, supported mm-hmm. him from back in the day and all that kind of stuff. And they come up to me and they said, but Ernie, I mean, we have a chance. We could save the Republican Party. And I'm like, I'm looking for a wooden stake and a mallet, man. I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
Right. That's right. That's right. That's exactly what we want to do with it. Because it's just one big party. If we can peel off the principled side of old-time conservatives, American First conservatives, and truly Trump's appealing to them, he's the only one saying non-intervention. So, you know, I think Trump can very much help drive that mallet, take that mallet and drive that stake into the heart of what's left of the party. The party is already very, very split. When you have...
Yeah, they just want to go over to the Libertarian. See, we win. It's
now,
all...
That's interesting.
We saved you.
That's, like, more interesting to me than the conspiracy theory that Trump is just there to hand the election to Hillary. If Trump is actually, like, a long game just to destroy the Republican Party, that's pretty interesting.
That would be nice, wouldn't it? Yeah, and I don't know if Trump personally intends to do it, but his attitude of irreverence towards the DNC... the DNC is the same thing, RNC. You know, the party elders... His attitude towards them is one of criticism. He says, what have you done? What can you show? You know, what's good about you? He doesn't just say, oh, I worship at your altar, like the other candidates all do and have. He says, you know, show me if you can, you know, show me what you got. I'm willing to look at it. And then he says, you're fired. And I think his campaign has been to hire another. His campaign manager, I think, is definitely not RNC stuff. The RNC told him to do same old, do a Romney. Well, I'll tell you. When they did a Romney in Virginia, that freaking guy who ran a terrible campaign, Virginia used to be kind of red, now it's purple. Well, Romney, as lousy as he was and as awful as he was, almost won Virginia. So that was a testament to Republicans being able to vote their lousy, you know, terrible candidate. People in Virginia, the country people, certainly, and a lot of people in the cities and towns, They actually like Trump, but they don't like Republicans. They don't like Republicans. There's conservative Democrats here like Trump. He's a populist, and they like it. So, you know, this idea that Virginia is not going to support Trump, Virginia is overwhelmingly going to go for Trump. You know, and
I have been seeing that in any time you're down on the ground or you're talking to people. But this is the first election that I have not seen hardly any Hillary or Trump bumper stickers for fear of getting your paint keyed or something.
Well,
you know?
Yeah, and that's interesting, and people are not doing that. Do we have like 1 minute? Because I just want to tell you something.
Yeah, we got a couple of minutes. Go.
It's a political stupid thing, but just a testament to the stupidity of the RNC and the RPV, the Republican Party of Virginia. They sent out to all the people on their list a pink bumper sticker that said, just say no to Hillary. I've seen none of them on any cars, but I've seen lots of them in people's houses, and people say, yeah, I got this. Nobody's going to put on a car. Say no to Hillary. Now, that's their way of supporting Trump, is to put Hillary's name on your car.
Well, not to mention, like, I mean, this is just maybe a little, like, marketing theory here, but I'm imagining that the by and large, most of your Trump supporters don't want a pink bumper sticker.
Yeah, and that's what I was thinking. I'm going...
No kidding. There's that, and also, isn't it like Politics 101, you don't want to put your enemy, your opponent's name out there? Because that's all people remember is... But so just say no to Hillary. I've seen not a single one of those bumper stickers out either, and I know the Republican Party of Virginia sent one to everybody who is on their mailing list, because it includes my daughter, who I roped into doing something, so now she's on their stupid list. And they wasted tons of money for that, and to me, it really shows you why the party is going to die. They're working against their candidate. They're making the decisions, and
In that line, I want to read this paragraph from your article, you know, on the deep state. Let me get this in. The deep state seems to have grown, strengthened, and tightened its grip. Can a lack of real money restrain or starve it? I once thought so, and maybe I still do, but it doesn't use real money, but rather debt, and creative financing to get that next new car or war and intervention and domestic spending program. Ultimately, it's not sustainable. And just as unaffordable, and just as unaffordable cars are junked, stripped, repossessed, and crushed up, so will go the way of the physical assets of the warfare welfare state. So that Karen Kotowski is kind of, you know, it's just going to go away for a lot of different reasons, whether they print money or not. I mean, in your opinion, it's just that everybody's opinion, and it's going to go down, and nobody's going to want to save it. They go, we got to save America. We got to go bomb somebody or do something, and nobody cares.
Right, nobody cares. And this is how empires always change and fall down. People who used to say, I'm a proud to be a Roman, then said, no, I'm not a Roman. I'm whatever it is, but don't call me a Roman. And, you know, this idea that people won't put the Republican and Democrat bumper stickers on their cars, it's already a rejection of what is being fed to us. And all that is just a good thing. But, you know, the one thing I liked about my article better than anything, and nobody commented on it, I was like, what? So, I mean, my vision of Washington, D.C. and the environs is a really shabby trailer park with a bunch of people. They're sitting in their front porch complaining about what they could have, should have, you know, what they could have been. I could have been somebody. And I vision that. I have that on my vision board, so to speak, you know. And nobody really shared my vision, but I still hold to that. I think a shabby trailer park filled with these people. And just, you know, maybe they're doing some work, you know, mowing yards. That's fine. Keep them in control there.
Shiny ties, though. You know, we're just a third world dictatorship with a shiny tie.
Yeah.
You know, this is, you know, one thing I wanted to ask real quick is the Snowden movie was supposed to come out like last December, and they keep putting it back, and I'm wondering why, but it's supposed to come out. They announced this December the new Snowden movie is coming out by Oliver Stone. Are you going to be watching that?
Probably so. I mean, I like the way he does stuff. I mean, sometimes he, you know, I don't agree with his stuff, but my goodness, he makes a good movie.
Yep. And every once in a while,
if he makes one like JFK, and it's the Stone one, that's going to be good. And, you know, people learn from stories more than anything else. You know, it goes back to the way Trump is connecting emotionally with so many people with his, you know, if you take his language at face value, you go, he's going to build a wall, that's stupid, that's unaffordable, that's not going to work. Well, that's the logical side. But on the emotional side, he's going to build a wall, he's going to protect me. I don't care how he does it. They want to feel protected. They want to feel like America is going to be great again. Whatever that means, that's what they want to feel. And he's feeding into those feelings. And I think, you know, him going down to Louisiana, you know, yeah, sure, that's a political stunt in some ways. But you know what?
It worked.
His whole emotional connection thing with average people.
You know, we have had Roger Stone on a few times. And he's, you know, big, you know, Trump guy, libertarian, kind of whatever. But his whole thing, he's had a lot of influence on Donald, he says, on the drug war and his rhetoric and stuff like that. And he says he is, you know, open to a lot of new stuff, and he's just, you know, playing whatever game he's playing. And when I press him on the wall, I go, seriously? He's going to build an actual physical Berlin Wall. I mean, you're right. I mean, a wall. Yeah. And it's like, well, you know, and he won't say no, or I can't get... I can't imagine an actual physical wall. We're going to have, you know, Mexican and Arizonan jackrabbits. I just don't see that. You know, if they do it, it may be what you're saying. He's just trying to give you that. Yeah, I'm going to defend you. You know, we're going to do a wall, be a surveillance wall of a electro, you know, whatever robot wall of a drone wall.
You know what? I don't think he's going to build a wall at all. I think what he's going to do is make some small executive attempt to follow the existing wall that we have. He said that, and I think that's what he's going to end up doing. And the other thing is, if I had a big wall to build, that's a big monster, 100-foot, 200-foot wall that I'm going to build over, like, six states, I would need money for that. Where would I get that money? I would bring home the troops and stop supporting these countries and, you know, that were cropping up, and stop supporting ISIS and fighting them at the same time.
Well, redeploy all our bases onto the border. I mean, why not?
He's going to need money. He's going to need resources. He's not going to raise taxes. He's never said he's going to raise. He says he's going to lower taxes. So how's he going to get the money to build the wall? Well, if the wall is a construct in his own mind, it's certainly a useful one if he wants to cut the military budget and shift the focus to actual defense instead of offense. And
okay, Karen, has the Trump campaign called you yet?
Hell no, they don't call me. They're not going to call me.
I might as well.
Well, I'm rooting for him. I'm not turned off by some of the words that he says. I think, you know, I guess I'm being like a neocon with this whole esoteric interpretation of what is written. But I think I think he's speaking the hearts. I think his words are tools. And I don't think he's as stupid as my people are.
No. The first thing that when he announced, this is the only comment that I made, I go, Trump already got what he wanted. What does he want? I have no idea, but he already got it. Okay?
Yeah.
So I don't think he's stupid at all. I think he's know exactly what he's doing. But he still lack a perspective sometimes of the. But I'm glad he's going out and doing. And I think I like the teleprompter Trump more. You know, I don't.
He offends less people when he's constrained on a teleprompter.
Yeah, rambles on and just blah 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 blah. You know, be a little bit more. You know what you're going to want to say and say it. I don't think anybody's writing things.
Well, teleprompter for him, but, yeah. Trump is written by all the consultants he's been hiring.
Yeah, but he's not going to be a Barack and just read whatever it said. And if the teleprompter goes out, he's more than happy to yak.
Yeah, know? For sure.
And he's friends with Roger Stone, you know, that Roger's supporting him. And Roger is this huge researcher of bad government, you know, and evil things the government has done. And
yeah, so see, that's the impression when talking to Roger is I get the impression this is all a show for him to get in and really do some damage. And the damage that he... I don't even think he wants to, like, lay waste to anything. He's just trying to get his buddies to, you know, keep their casinos and manufacturing and businesses in America and get all the money to come back and reduce this penalty on blah, 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 blah. And I can see that. I'm just wondering, what is the mechanism? What is the research? What is the feedback that he's getting that he would do it this way? And I'm going... There has to be something that he knows that we don't. I mean, he's on television. I mean, he does the, you know, the bombastic. And the thing when he does the Trump Twitter feed, that was what was amazing to me. For the first time in human history, you know, other than pamphlets, Thomas Jefferson or something, is that in 140 characters, he can maintain a 24-hour news cycle whenever the hell he wants.
Yeah.
Right, that's right. He's mastered the modern era of politics and... And again, that modern era is probably not going to include effective political parties, and that's why it's the end of the Republican Party. I'd like to say the Democrats can end, but they don't really have a party anyway. They just have massive people that show up to vote and whatever, multiple times it seems like. But with the Republicans, you know, they imagine that they stand for something, and in fact, they do not stand for anything. And Trump's presidency or Trump's candidacy and his what he's doing is going to help crush the core and break it up into multiple parts, and that's a good thing, because the more people think for themselves and have to decide what kind of Republican I want to be if I'm a Republican, what kind, and again, the Johnson Weld, libertarians have to decide, what kind of libertarian am I? Do I believe in libertarian values, or am I going to support Weld and Johnson because he's in the party? This is great.
I'm like, and you're still voting? The what happened with the voting machine kind of thing has come up. They've been making a big deal. I'm like, thank God somebody actually, you know, addressed this as an issue. Do you think Trump's going to have to go up against computer programming?
Well, I do think it'll be used most likely against him and possibly for him. It's hard to say. You know, there's crooks everywhere. you know, it's funny though. You probably don't watch that Scandal show on TV.
I've watched some of it. Yeah.
Yeah, well, anyway, like, early on when I guess it's 5 years into it or whatever, but the whole core that brought these people together is when they conducted electronic vote manipulation in a couple of key counties and precincts in Ohio in order to deliver the election to a certain candidate.
Really?
Okay. But, yeah. This is what, now, if you are a Scandal person, now, Shonda Rhimes is the producer and writer for this, and I don't know about her politics. You know, she's a black lady friend to Oprah, you know, whatever. I don't know what it means. But let me tell you, her whole storyline is about human corruption in all the shows that she does. It's about human flaws and corruption. And in the show Scandal, it's about political corruption and just the very things that all these whacked out right-wing conspiracy theorists like myself would be advocating. She put that up on screen for a whole bunch of people who don't think about politics at all, but they watch it on scandal, and they go, well, this is possible because I saw it on, you know, stealing votes is possible because I saw 5 years ago. So I think that, again, just like the internet opens up avenues of truth, if you can find it, and debate and all that other stuff, I think people are way aware of the fact that, whether it's fact or you saw it on scandal, they're aware that votes can be manipulated electronically through computers. And I think that awareness will be a little bit of a hedge against it. But again, you know, it's who counts the votes, and voting is the stupid thing. I'm interested in the movement part. Just like the Ron Paul movement, it's not dead. It continues in so many different ways, and you know this, Ernie. I mean, it's like people have, once you get your eyes open, you won't shut them again. And he's touched so many people with his logic, his message, his truth, and not just him, but a whole bunch of people that are like Ron Paul that understand the same things he does. The work that you're doing, the other radio guy that you mentioned at the beginning when we were talking, your friend, your buddy out there in Arizona,
Dr. Frank Tamburi.
No,
but who are you talking about? Charles?
All your friends. No, the radio guy, Charles Goyette.
Yeah, Charles Goyette, yeah.
But he's been doing all this, but a lot of people, it's expanding and expanding. You go on, I mean, it's just all kinds of people putting out the truth, and people are finding the truth, and they're finding it not in politics, and they are, in some ways, turning their backs. And yes, sure, if they show up in November, throw a vote for Trump, and then turn their back on it, that's fine, because throwing a vote for Trump is spitting in the face of the state. And you've got to take that opportunity. You've got to like that. You've got to enjoy that for what it's worth. And then go back to what's really important, which is not the state. Society, community, family, your life, liberty.
This is where the voting thing comes into me, and it's like, we just blew right through the break, and we're already into the first segment of the next hour. If you got to stay now, I tricked you,
uh-oh.
You know, Karen couldn't stop. So the thing that I wanted to do is point out in politics that voting and vote total, whether accurate or not or anything, it's just the response to the election campaign, all that is just a side effect of a much larger just opinion, you know, of people living their lives. And, you know, the act of voting, not voting, putting up signs, you know, a lot of the activism that we do was not, you know, we wanted to see how many votes we could get. It's how many signs we could put up. You mean, Right. Wait a minute, I fill out this paperwork and I can put up signs and they stay up forever and always through the campaign and I get to say this and go to that webpage or a QR code to bite me? Okay, I'll do that. Oh, I can do it just as a write-in? Wait a minute. I just fill this in, I can write in, and I can put signs up. Okay, Well, let's do that. You know, that's how I started in 1990. That's what gave me standing for all the lawsuits and everything. It was just to get the freaking sign and the concept injected, and they couldn't stop it without, you know, just going out and taking down signs. And they don't have that much support or infrastructure or numbers or people. It's all from bluster and BS of how powerful they really are. And when you go up against people just have an opinion, you're done.
You know, There's something about this that rhymes with the Iranian Revolution to me. Like the idea of supporting a candidate for the disruptive power of it and because he has the right enemies. Like, that's like, the Iranian Revolution is against the Shah, and the Shah is a tyrant, and so we're all against the Shah, and so we're going to support the Ayatollah because it's disruptive and he has the right enemies. But that's not what the revolutionaries wanted. The revolutionaries wanted more of a secular sort of free society, and they got the Ayatollah because it was an entirely disruptive movement that didn't have a clear idea of what they were going to build once it was torn down.
Well,
That's true, too. That is true. But their situation,
this is a completely, that's why I say it rhymes with. It's not a perfect analogy, but like it's the same phenomenon. They, like, Trump is a disruptive candidate who's going to tear things apart. He doesn't have a clear vision of what to build in its place. So what do we get 4 years from now?
But why are we asking the state to build anything? I would have him fight battles in D.C. and I'll turn my back on him. I would have him cause so much bureaucratic infighting in protecting their budgets and their existence under a Trump redraw of the executive branch, in the sense that, you know, all these agencies that have been started, if he starts killing some of them off. I mean, this is why one of the big draws of Reagan. Reagan said he's going to get rid of the Department of Education. Did he do it? No, he didn't. But one of the people thought, oh, wow, you know, he's going to shrink government a little bit. He didn't, but it was a selling point. Now, I think Trump has experience in cutting and looking at accountability within an organization because he's done that for so long. I actually let him have it. Who else wants to be president? You know,
right.
I'd love to have him up there, and he can fuss and fight with them, and I can do what I need to do.
You know, literally, he has to take a lifestyle reduction. I don't think they have enough gold-plated chairs in the White House to, you know, make him happy. So,
you know what? I would see Trump, and I could be wrong on this, but I would see Trump making a point to pay for his own vacation. You know, this thing with Obama, with this constant high-security travel that he and his family do. I mean, seriously. And Bush did the same, but they said, oh, well, Bush just went to his ranch. Well, that's not 100% true. They went everywhere.
Well, any time that you have the president go anywhere, they shut down the entire freaking airspace, ground, road.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, are you kidding me? It's like when a police officer gets killed or something, they shut down the damn city. And I'm going,
you know what the Louisiana governor said? I don't know who it is down there, but, Trump went down there and did his thing, you know, and supposedly bought some stuff for him and showed the flag, whatever. And they said, well, Obama didn't go because he would have disrupted logistics, which is partially a true statement because everywhere he goes, he disrupts logistics. And there is that to think about. But I just think, you know, when's the last time we had a populist who isn't really tied to his own party? We've had them before. I don't see a problem with it. I don't fear that in Washington. And I do think that they're going to keep his hands tied dealing with all the D.C. stuff.
Yeah, this is my view on the Trump thing. I got, you got to see, you should, look this up and look at the graphics. It's called Trump the Coloring Book, or the Trump Coloring Book. And a bunch of us, we have it here. This one is a new one, but we have one that all the guests and everybody, they're given colored pencils and they all do a page, So we just keep building this up. And I know Dr. Frank wants to, I don't know, give it to Trump or something. But
yeah, where is that? I want to do a page.
Yeah. Well, it's at his house. We'll have him bring it tomorrow. But the Trump coloring book is, it's kind of representative of just how penetrative this whole thing has been. And I'm going, all right, it's every, and it's kind of fun, and it's just, it's him flying the Enola Gay, or him as Mal, in Serenity, or him as the Breakfast Club at the end with his hand up, or him, kissing the nurse in Times Square, it's that kind of crap. And it's just, it's fun, and it's been fun, and your opposition don't like you having fun. Oh, you're having fun. You're not allowed to have fun, okay? Well, this fun, would it go into his presidency? I don't see the presidency as really, the less we consider it valid in our lives, the better. But
this is
representative of the less we see it as representative in our lives. I mean, I'm just seeing it as, if you want to have a cartoon character superhero, and the front page is him with a, Superman pose and, with a red tee, So I'm going, if you have someone in there that's bigger than life and it's just going to be all this controversy, I can see that as a positive thing. Making fun of it, not taking it too seriously is cool. And then he actually will meet with Putin or not bomb Turkey or dismantle even the threat of dismantling NATO. That's another thing. Here's something that you come up with, that goes along your line. Is if he's saying, we're just do away with NATO. Hell, they pay for their own crap. Is that a negotiating position, or does he really mean it?
Well, I actually think that's where he's going to get the money for this fake wall. but really, he has talked about this for a long period of time. I'm sure they're going to try to talk him out of it if he gets elected. But seriously, it probably is a going-in position, because what he's saying is very clearly and truthfully that you have a share that's been allocated, you NATO countries. Well, first off, there's no Warsaw Pact, so he realizes that NATO is just a structure, an institution that has no meaning. It has no usefulness at all, certainly ineffective as a war-fighting mechanism, and there's no doubt about that, and even NATO people will tell you it.
They cause a war.
Yeah, they can cause one, but they can't fight it. They can't succeed at it. They can't prevail. They're useless, absolutely useless. So he's saying to them, you don't have a mission. you are useless, and oh, by the way, you're not paying your fair share. Now, that's a great going-in position because nobody can argue with it. It is a true fact. So, will he be able to dismantle it? I'd like to think that he can. But even if he can't, he's going to shine a spotlight on who's not paying and what we Americans are getting or not getting for the money we're paying. That's a beautiful thing. Why can't Obama
we'll
do that? Why
can't
they do that? Now, that's, they didn't want to do that. They want to go there because that's an institution that feeds on central power, you know, in D.C., and feeds on that support. And, you know, it's part of the deep state. Oh, we have this revolving door. Everybody benefits. Well, you know, he's not part of that. So he can shine light on things like NATO's waste and uselessness. And seriously, you ask most people in this country how useful NATO is. They don't have any examples of how useful it is.
You know, well, what's your view on his positions and everything about the European Union in general and Brexit and all this other stuff? Because the European Union is freaking just disintegrating, too. And Merkel's doubled down on, you know, everybody should take in a Muslim or something. I mean, there's something weird going on. Is Soros in her pocket, got her pocket too or something? What's going on?
What? Oh, who's saying what?
And also,
you mean like refugees?
Yeah, no, Merkel is like doubling down. Yeah, we need more refugees. Everybody, every German family should take one. And, you know, we need to something. I mean, not that I care, but I'm just like, what is going on?
Well, I'll tell you one thing that's going on in Europe is they're not having any kids. And their economies are all stifled with, you know, 60-70% government consumption of wealth, most of them. And so when you have high taxes, a pretty significant welfare state for all the people, and nobody's having kids. Of course, that's why probably why a lot of them aren't having kids. But anyway, people aren't having kids. They're not populating. They got nobody to mow the grass. They got nobody to do the work. I mean, the Turks have been in Germany forever. No, didn't cause a problem because they did work. And I think it's just an extenuation of her worker policy, and it's going to get her diselected, unelected, whatever. I mean, it's not popular. But I know that these guys in many of these countries are suffering demographic challenges and tax challenges, which have not been resolved. And since there's no leadership, they won't be resolved until it craps the country, like Greece. And Greece didn't solve anything because they kept flowing money into Greece. So it didn't really get, it was too big to fail kind of thing. So, even though I'm sure if you ask a guy living in Greece, they probably feel like
they failed,
not lose, and everything's terrible. But, you know, Greece is not Venezuela because they got bailed. It could be Venezuela easily, but nobody's really helping Venezuela because, I mean, the Russians aren't. Russians aren't communists anymore. They don't believe in socialism anymore. I mean, Putin is a capitalist. What do you want? So, you know, it's about demographics. I think that's part of what the European thing is. And also, look at the age on these European leaders. My goodness, their time is pretty much coming to a close.
Well, Sarkozy says that, or Holland, or one of the guys, I think it's Sarkozy. He's going to run again. He's going to come back.
Yeah, but the younger people are not advocating for, the younger politicians aren't going for socialism. They're going for more of an honest economy and, you know, less so-called charitableness. But see, again, you know, we think like Merkel is bringing the help the refugees. And sure, you know, NATO and the United States have caused this refugee problems. And not the countries down there have caused them, too. But some of it is some responsibility. But this advocacy is seen as government charity. But remember, the government, if you steal money from somebody and give it to somebody else, that's not charity.
Well, you know, I one thing I wanted to get, been talking to Corbett and Sabell and Horton and so on, and I'd like to get your perspective on Syria and Libya and China and Russia and Ukraine and Turkey. Can you give us a once for on that, seeing as how you were North African desk?
Yeah, well, I see Libya as a resource war, you know, to make AFRICOM.
Okay, well, let's go ahead. We're coming right back. I'm going to introduce you, you know, from your Africa desk days, and let's go through
that.
Yeah,
I do want to talk about AFRICOM because that's the scary thing.
All right, here we go.
At LRN.FM.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Country music's got mamas and daddies.
We got bar rooms and no heartbreak songs. But I'm here today to stand up and say how I feel about my home sweet home. What's left, what's right, and what's wrong. And I'm taking my country back. Son, you ain't been doing her right.
Yeah, yeehaw! Karen Kotowski is going to be voting for, yeah, she's going to be voting. So this is, she's taking her country back. Well, you know, one thing I did, we didn't even get a chance to, you know, talk about this yet. I wanted to make sure we brought up this one thing. It is this, you know, wars and rumors of wars. We got, you know, Libya getting reinvaded again for whatever purpose of, I don't have no freaking clue. The Syria thing going on, Turkey, whatever, South China Sea, aircraft carriers being redeployed, kind of doing, and on the Ukrainian border of Putin's, and Turkey going off on every, somebody's starting to, wanting to start a freaking war. Now, Karen Kotowski, she, I guess, was your last job before you left the Pentagon. You were the African desk of, and I remember at that time they had not had an Africa con, and it was just like this Africa command thing that they had just created then or something?
Well, before I worked for the Near East South Asia, I worked in the Central Africa, the Sub-Saharan Africa office of OSD, and our big agenda there that our bosses were pushing was to try to establish AFRICOM as its own command. You know, and you know how the combat commands work. We have the whole planet covered, and everybody, there's a combatant commander, like CENTCOM or whatever, European command, whatever, that covers basically the whole planet. Now, first off, that's like crazy that the United States would think they own the world, but whatever, we have this thing, this global setup. And Africa, the continent of Africa, was divided amongst European Command, Central Command, and Pacific Command. I think had Madagascar and Seychelles. So the people that studied Africa, State Department orients themselves differently. So they said, well, you know, we have to work with all these different military commands. And, you know, the State Department is quite a warlike bureaucracy as well, as you can tell from that 51 State Department senior people that signed on saying we need to go into Syria and kill Assad. Remember that? About a month ago, 2 months ago? Anyway, they're very warlike, and they don't get the biggest budget like the Pentagon does, but, you know, they supported a single combatant commander for the continent of Africa. And, of course, the military was less likely because that would mean that European Command, Central Command, and Pacific Command would have to lose responsibility. You know, bureaucracies don't like to lose areas of responsibility. But so they've been working on it for quite a long time. When I was in there, they were talking about it, trying to figure out how they could do it. And then finally, they set up a figurehead command that worked out of European Command. It may still do. And they put a four-star general there. Black guy happened to be the first guy. I don't know who's running it now. You know, and it was all really kind of, you know, ceremonial. I don't know what they really did. But apparently, the next thing that general and his staff did in AFRICOM was figure out how to make himself relevant to the military and the State Department. Well, how do you make yourself relevant to your government when your government is exporting wars and exporting weaponry? Well, you sell weapons and you make wars. So that's what they've been working on real hard. A big part of, I'm sure, Libya and what we're doing in Somalia, what we're doing, all those bases we have in that little tiny country south of Somalia, or west of Somalia a little bit, that little tiny little place. It's all French and American bases. I forget the name. Djibouti. And some of the other parts of Africa, particularly, you know, you hear a lot about Nigerian human trafficking, and you've got a little bit of drug trafficking going on, heck, killing elephants, whatever it is that catches the public's fancy. You know, AFRICOM sees as an opportunity to make themselves relevant as a combatant command, and you need combat, you need wars. So I think part of the renewing in Libya is that. I think now Yemen, the war that we're supporting that Saudi Arabia is prosecuting against Yemen and has been for some time, doesn't get a lot of news. You know, we've been involved in that. That's Central Command, but it's supported by Africa Command because the logistics base in Djibouti is on the continent of Africa. So, you know, all this stuff makes AFRICOM and the other commands, you know, war makes them relevant. They want war. So this is, you know, because American people got nothing against any of these countries.
They probably don't even know where they are.
No, there. They don't know where they are, and they don't care, and they're not going to travel there. And if they did, they would be shocked to see what our government policy is in some of these places.
Well, only if there was a Pokemon to go get or something.
Yeah, maybe there that's you what go. We could get a Pokemon and get them over there. But,
support
of course,
international
they
don't want travel. They don't want Somalia-specific Pokemon.
Anyway, this AFRICOM is a driver, and I think it reveals the danger of government.
Okay, a driver for what? Just the African continent?
A driver
or?
For intervention. It's a driver for intervention for military and State Department intervention in countries where we haven't intervened before. And it's a self licking ice cream cone. I mean, they create a problem and they solve it. This is what government does.
Self licking ice cream cone.
Solve it. You know, they break your leg, give you a crutch, and say, "See how well you walk with that crutch I just gave you?" I mean, this is what governments do. It's certainly played out in how the Pentagon works, how the military works, how these bureaucracies.
Well, how is it working in Libya right now? What are we going back to do? What I don't even understand. Libya even exists anymore? What is Libya?
Okay, first off, go back to why we knocked that old crazy dude off and killed him, and Hillary was laughing about how she had him slaughtered and dragged in the street and sodomized. She thought that was real fun. Okay, well, that guy had ruled Libya, dictator, you know, Gaddafi, for many, many years, and Gaddafi was actually very cooperative with European and American interests. He got rid of the nuclear material that he was trying to buy. He really compromised really well, but the problem with him was, you know, he has a lot of gold, and he has oil. And he was going to use that gold and oil to he was advocating and had real solid plans to implement a gold currency.
For all of Africa, not just for Libya.
Yeah, it was a gold-backed dinar, and he's made buddies with the Chinese. Chinese were investing a lot in oil well, and the American, oh, hell no. So they go bomb the living crap out of it. And I'm wondering, at the time, it was Gaddafi, regardless of what we thought of him, how was he perceived by the people? I mean, I thought he was popular.
Well, you know, I'm sure they perceive him a lot like we do Bob Goodlatte in the 6th District. He's been there for so long, you know, you can't get rid of him. You really don't like him. But what are you going to do? What are you going to do? You know, he hasn't really harmed me personally. I think people were sick of him politically. But frankly, he was a nutcase. But I don't think, you know, again, it's their problem to deal with. It's like getting rid of a guy like McCain forever and ever. It's the problem of the people in Arizona to do. They can't get themselves to get rid of him. Then that's their problem. I don't need to go do something to McCain. That's their problem. It's the same in all these countries. They have self-determination. Let them do it without our help. But we help. It's not just gold, it's oil, and I'm sure, I don't have any evidence other than past history, but the reason we're bombing again is because our oil interests are probably being threatened by some group or groups, could be ISIS, who we've got to pay for. So, anyway, you got that.
Alright, well, Turkey, you know, we're just blazing through the breaks here. Everybody has to go to the archive for all the good Karen, because, you know, I mean, she just goes right through it. So, yeah, we'll go ahead and continue to get, you know, as much density as we can from her. But what's going on in Turkey and Ukraine and all that? We'll get to that right now.
Okay.
Go.
Oh, go. Yeah, okay. Well, Turkey.
Coplock is.
So they had that coup, and we didn't say anything about the coup. Like, the American government didn't say, our NATO ally, our friend in Turkey, just got a coup, but he successfully put it. We didn't say that. Nobody in our government said
no, because Erdogan was too vocal against Israel, and they're our special ally.
That's part of it. And the other part of it was maybe we had a little bit of knowledge of what was happening, and we decided not to tell them, thinking, military taking over Turkey is a good thing. I mean, when has that ever happened, right? Military taking over Turkey. Oh, sure, yeah, we can do that. So we can support that. We can get behind that. And then Erdogan, Erdogan.
Erdogan, or whatever.
I think it's Erdogan.
Yeah, his name, the way they say it. But yeah, he successfully used social media and whatever support he had, and kind of rallied the people to some extent. And he sustained himself, and he also, in doing that, temporarily, I think, took power over Incirlik Air Base, and it got other bases around there, other nuclear storage sites around Incirlik and on Incirlik, where these are not things that we wanted. You know, U.S. controlled nukes, you know, but here he had control over them. I think, and it speaks to the stupidity of the American government and the advisors and Obama and all these people. I mean, they don't have a clue as to how things work. They got no intel on the ground that's worth anything. They listen to people that are advocating for this and that, like the guy in Pennsylvania who I think Erdogan wanted to have extradited, and he said, this is the guy who's behind the coup. He's been living in Pennsylvania with, you know, working with the CIA. And all. Well, could be true. I don't know. Could be true.
Yeah, who is that guy? He's some gazillionaire that has private schools that are something.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Davi, what do you know about that guy?
What's his
name?
Much
about it.
The guy that has the private schools that was, you know, he's always a threat to Turkey to go back, and he's a gazillionaire that has a lot of these private Muslim schools.
I don't think I know the story.
The very fact that he's living in the United States while fomenting actions against a NATO ally and he's being protected by it, that is a little bit disingenuous of our government, number one. He's not here as a refugee, and if he's got all that money, why do you live in Pennsylvania? I mean, there's better places to live and not in the United States. Where we have far more freedom to do things, but, you know, to do things like work for taking over. They come to this country if they want to take over some foreign government that they're part of in order to get help from the CIA and help from the U.S. government and the military. It's that simple. I'm sorry. I'm way
Yeah, past. No, they come in with their 60 guys and pull down a statue and say we're in charge now as they unload from their C-130.
We've seen it multiple times before with these potential American tin pots that we're going to put in charge. To, who was the guy that died not too long ago? The guy we were going to put in charge of Iraq after we...
Chalabi or something? Or
yeah, Chalabi. We had this guy. Where's he hanging out? England and United States, you know. And we're gonna set him up, and he's going to be our little friend, you know, in the Middle East. I mean, it's just a stupid, stupid... stupid foreign policy.
You know, I'm disappointed with myself that I can even remember these guys' names. Because I mean, seriously, they're just, you know, the next one. You know, there's another guy, and that guy's son, and, you know, and then his former, you know, roommate's ex, you know, wife's cousin or something. I mean, it's just, they're just on the shelf for them to make use of when they need to. And I'm going, so then we're getting into the deep state. Who the hell are they? You know? I want to get to Ukraine and Putin. We're going to be coming back here. So let's go ahead. Wait a second. I want to get that live on. We got like 15 seconds. But I want to get, you know, this Putin and Ukraine and all the saber rattling that's going on there. All right?
Yeah.
So hold on. Here we go.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Man, you learn everything about everything. You know, Karen has got an opinion, and, you know, when you're sitting in the desk for a long time next to Rumsfeld, Cheney, and Office Special Plan Pentagon, you know, doing and writing behind the scenes and doing documentaries and movies and running for office and being supported and paying attention to Trump, how he's pissing off all the people. It's got, you know, let's ask Karen. Now, one thing that I want to ask is the... Ukraine and Putin and Turkey and what's going on there? Because what do we have the headlines last week? I had like three headlines. One, it goes, Turkey allies with Iran in their common effort to something. And then Turkey is buddies and sitting here shaking hands with Putin. And the U.S. Removed all their nukes from Turkey.
You know? So, have we removed the nukes then? That's good.
Well, I think I saw that. They were removing, you know, that was the headline. I don't know if they actually did anything, but, you know, I'll look it up.
Well, that's great. And that's how, you know, this is how these countries will succeed in rejecting, you know, our hegemony or our imperialism or whatever you want to call it. It's great. I did not see that. But certainly, you know, the U.S. government... They don't like what Turkey's doing because Turkey's getting a little uppity, and you can't get uppity when the United States, you know, is running things everywhere. Even if we're running them badly, which of course we are, because we have no knowledge whatsoever of what we're doing in our foreign
Okay, here it is. U.S. moves nuclear weapons from Turkey to Romania.
Oh, Romania! Oh, my God.
Yeah, like that's any better. I mean, you know, it's...
Get ready to start memorizing a name of some puppet that we're going to put in charge of Romania if we haven't already. That's so ludicrous. And, it's sad because we're behaving very much like the old Soviet Union did when they had the power and control, economic and political, over so many other countries who had their hands out. And now we have become, the communist, empire, not Putin, who's a capitalist. You do have to worry about the issues going on in Ukraine. You know, we've been messing with the Ukrainian government and their colored revolutions and whatnot. I don't know if it's pink, orange, blue, red, whatever they had, pink, I can't remember, yellow, whatever color it was. Anytime they put a color on, that's the sign that it's pretty much the Americans are the national, what is it, the two organizations that help run some foreign policy and the CIA, State Department. You know, we've got our hand in this. And we've been messing with Ukraine for quite a long time. And it's a resource war, and it's a geographic issue that the Americans want to... I mean, obviously, if it's the Obama administration and the deep state in D.C. had their way, Ukraine would be a part of NATO. I mean, they want that. They want to get right on... It's just nuts. And, of course, realize NATO has no purpose except to foment problems and make war. It's not a defensive structure at all in any way, shape, or form. It's not defensive. It's offensive. So... Ukraine's been being messed with by our government for quite a long time. And this iteration, so-called the troops that I guess the Russians are bringing, I mean, this is not, this is just smart on their part. But yes, it's dangerous. I mean, it's dangerous because, you know, when you're a kid and they used to say, you don't pick fights, you can't, you don't go up to the biggest guy in the block and, pick a fight unless you're prepared with your gang to beat the crap out of it. You just don't go and put yourself out there to get hurt unless you're stupid. And yet that is our foreign policy. Our foreign policy is to go out there and put ourselves out there, put our troops out there, put our reputation as Americans out there. We advocate liberty and rule of law. Well, we put all that out there so it can get stomped. Because we don't really believe in it, we don't value it. And this is what you kind of see in playing out there. Now, I like to think about, let's say Russian troops, Ukraine, hotspot, escalate. Okay, how does that, which political candidate does that help? Does it help Clinton, who wants to, make more war and beef up the foreign policy, be a hardcore neocon? Does it help her? Or does it help the America Firster guy who's saying, we really need to pull back? Well, if you could attack most any country, most any population, first reaction, get their back hairs up, we're going to kick their ass. And that's the American way anyway, right? I mean, that's our culture. Our culture is, I'm going to kick your butt. Not a very thing to be proud of. Let's make America great again, right? Let's kick your butt. But the guy that's advocating kind of a breaking up a NATO, defunding NATO, making everybody else pay more, bringing troops back.
I'm sorry? Is that...
I think it's going to hurt him. I think if there's a hot spot, an escalation, a fear that's generated, a global war that happens in the southern part of Crimea or parts of Ukraine, that does not help Trump get elected. That helps neocons get elected. And if China blows up, which China is very careful and it's not going to blow up, but let's say China blew up, because there's a big neocon push to make China the next big Soviet Union, which is not appropriate. It's not suitable, but that's what they're trying to do. And if something happens over there and Americans get scared, this hurts any candidate who is advocating bringing troops home. So, certainly stirring up trouble a couple months or a month or a week before the election that causes Americans to be very fearful. And to react, not to think, but to react with, we need to go kick somebody's butt, that's going to hurt the America First candidate. That's going to hurt the candidate who has advocated, to some extent, a non-aggressive foreign policy. That's going to hurt the candidate who says, I think I can work with Putin. Because what better way to show you can't work with Putin is Putin starts a war against a friend of the government's in Ukraine, per se. I see these things as calculated. I see them as political. They certainly not have to do with anybody's real, the American people's interests, certainly. The deep state's very interested in not having a America First type
foreign policy.
Well, tell me about China. What's going on in South China? Is there, we're building up to a what?
Okay. The way the Chinese government says it, which nobody wants to hear this, and I'm sure it's not necessary, but they're saying that, you know, America has a policy in the Gulf of Mexico. Even though it's not our territory, we traverse the Gulf of Mexico. We say who can sail in and out of the Gulf of Mexico. We put limits on it. In fact, one of the reasons they couldn't get the spill cleaned up, the BP oil spill cleaned up, is because some of the foreign countries or foreign flag vessels that could have easily come in there and done some of the cleanup were forbidden to do so because of trade policy and the fact that we said this is our Gulf of Mexico, even though it's technically not our Gulf of Mexico. It's international waters. But because of the geography, we have claimed ownership and operational control over Gulf of Mexico.
And so China goes, well, our South China Sea, and it's even got, you know, it says South China Sea instead of the Gulf of Mexico, so we got better claim.
Yeah, actually, that's right. That's exactly right. And I think it's a smaller area, but I don't know for sure because I'm not up on the specific geography. But it's one of those things where they say it's a sphere of influence. It's a sphere of influence for China, just like your Gulf of Mexico is a sphere of influence. And it's traditional because our Gulf of Mexico policy is really a traditional inheritance of the Monroe Doctrine and other stuff that we say we have interest here, even though we don't really have a legal claim. We are making it a legal claim because we're going to exert our great power. Well, that's what they're doing. They're making a claim, may not be 100% legal or not, but they're going to exert their great power over South China, or over certain parts of South China Sea because they want to and because they can. And, you know, the other thing is that we don't get in this country is China is a huge trade partner for all of the Pacific and Indonesian states, Australia. It's huge. Now, it's huge for America, too. I mean, that's what they do. They make stuff, right?
Yeah, but there's a banking thing coming up, too. I mean, you know, it's kind of like China is break with thee. No. We're going to make you part of the International Monetary Fund of the basket of we keep you inside and don't worry about nothing to see here. But they're going, nah, I break with thee.
Well, people I break hate with China because they're just capitalisming better than us.
Damn capitalists. Damn pure capitalist Chinese.
Yeah.
China has big problems. I mean, they've got these ghost cities that they constructed. They've got huge problems and financial unbalance. You know, they've done the same thing our Fed has done. They've participated in the explosion and devaluation of money. They've done a lot of things which aren't healthy for China.
Yeah, and the ghost cities, I mean, it's not like they don't have enough people to put in them or something. I don't understand what... They're fighting over property rights of who developer that ripped off everybody owns it, and they're going to try and get some, or is it just going to get seized by the government and given to the peasants? These ghost cities house tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of people.
Send the immigrants from Europe that the Europeans don't want over to these ghost cities. That'd be fine. But, of course,
China would go for that one.
No, they won't do that because it's not in their interest. They still think of themselves as a great country with great interests, and is that true? I mean, China does have a long history of being kind of quasi-united, even though they speak, 47 different languages in China. It's hard to say. I don't think Americans understand much about it. And frankly, we don't have to. We're not required to understand.
Yeah, I'm just like, you know, if it's as rosy a picture as you're going to paint when Trump comes in, he's like, we'll just go hang and and be friends, and I don't care. You know, we'll take care of America and, not shipping jobs everywhere and all that, and regulation. I mean, I think he represents a lot of education by the people of, yes, these are issues that they don't want to talk about, that he's talking about, maybe as verbose as he can be about it, just to get it so it's talked about or something. But he represents, by just his rhetoric, the threat to everything holy on the government, whatever the hell they want to do. And I'm going, I can't imagine them allowing him to take the reins of power.
I really worry that they won't let him. Whether through vote fraud, which I think we'll have plenty of vote fraud, but we always do. I don't think that'll be a factor. But I think because I think he's going to have popular vote, so-called, whatever that is. But I don't think they're going to let him you know, and that's the problem with being a 70-year-old man in a high-pressure world. You know, he'd have a heart attack, and nobody would say, well, you know, that happens.
Okay, let me give you a story. I mean, this is how crazy stuff I look. It's just, you know, amazing. All right, so Daily Mail, you know, out of the UK, and this is the headline. The U.S. Air Force reveals radical plan to bomb the sky to improve radio reception.
What?
The United States Air Force has granted contracts to three research teams to develop the technology needed to do this, with hopes that CubeSats could carry massive amounts of ionized gas to the ionosphere to create radio-reflecting plasma. The ionosphere begins roughly 40 miles above the surface and becomes denser with charged particles at night, allowing signals to travel much further. Ground-based radio signals are limited by the curvature of the blah, 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 blah. We need to do chemtrails so the Air Force can have better radio.
And seriously, you know, again, I always think the private enterprise can do things far better than the government. You can see that the military, Air Force, Army, Navy, all of them, are in the intelligence communities that are mainly defense, but under the Defense Department, but also CIA directly. All of these guys are seeking new missions, new justifications, and they're doing it because the money's running out, and they see the writing on the wall.
In what sense is this even remotely necessary?
These guys, I heard on the radio yesterday, just somebody's interviewing some guy who runs a blog for baby boomers, right? What's their big issue? Well, 10,000 guys, men and women a day, are added to the Social Security rolls because the baby boomers hit it a few years ago. And they're going to run them through this big generation, and they're going to pay them inflation-adjusted, because right now it's still inflation-adjusted, even if it's government inflation numbers. They're going to pay them this money. Now, that's a broke system. You know, it's paid by whatever you paid last week out of your check. It's going to go to someone in Florida. You know, some guy on Social Security who doesn't have any savings, and that's what they're living on. So they need that money. And yeah, sure, they probably paid in. For a couple of years, they're probably just getting out what they paid in. And then the rest of their life, they're getting whatever, you know, whatever. But that money's been raided. It doesn't really exist. You know, it's a Ponzi scheme. But guess what? Ponzi schemes are triangles. You got to have a figure on the bottom, and you do at the top. We don't have that demographically. I'm telling you, when those baby boomers start realizing that cat food's not tasty, the whole military budget is going to get axed, and I don't care what they do to stop it. They won't be able to because, you know, these baby boomers, you know, we're a righteous generation. You know, we think we deserve a lot, and we paid in, and we want this, and we want that, and we don't like eating cat food. So guess what? Military budget slashed. The military, the Pentagon sees this, and so they're looking for a new mission. More aggressively, I think, than they even did after the Cold War ended, because that was certainly a rash of looking for a new mission, you know, in the early 90s. But they're looking for new missions now of all different kinds, and many of them are domestic. Because why? The foreign ones are easy to cut. Americans could care less. Take the nukes out of Turkey and say sayonara. We don't care about the Turks anymore. Great. Wonderful. Americans love that. Okay? Now, we pull back the military to our country borders, which where it should be anyway. Yeah, but that, you know, we don't need as much military as we have, and other people, other recipients of government money, you know, particularly the Social Security recipients, are going to want their money, and they're going to cut the budgets for things that are seen as not necessary. And much of the military budget is seen as not necessary. There's a lot of other budgets that are seen, the education budget, and little dinky executive departments are not necessary. And all of these guys are going to see their money taken away, their budgets taken away, their power taken away, and people are going to be put on early retirement or they're going to get fired. Contractors are going to get let go. This is happening. It's coming. You can't stop it. It can't be stopped. So when you tell me stuff like this, and I'll have to look at that article, very interesting, it's really a reflection that the Pentagon knows what you and I know, that this gravy train is coming to an end. What can't go on forever doesn't.
Okay, why can't it? I mean, they've been yanking stuff out of their butt, you know, that's been amazing to me. They've been able to go as long as they have. They just print more money until...
I mean, not to get too cynical, but if the world's most grating generation gets too uppity, why not just purge them? I mean, they've been talking about death panels for years, so...
Yeah.
But we have things like... All right, here's a headline. We should just do some of the headlines. Here it goes, the Department of Defense doesn't have a clue what the Pentagon spent $8.5 trillion on.
That's right. That's half our national debt. What the heck happened?
$8.5 trillion. I mean, holy crap. And then there's what was the other story here? There's Climate activists create tax policies to discourage childbirth. Well, that goes against your demographic right there to fund this thing.
Wait, say that again? Climate activists
create tax policies to discourage childbirth.
So we want to reduce the population. We want to reduce.
And then we got California kids, no vaccinations, and no school for you. You know, I mean, it just goes, you put all this stuff together and you go, man, there's no rhyme or reason, or there's some, it's just control for the sake of, and it's just stupid. You know?
It really is. People are increasingly turning their back on government, and I think they're turning their back on government service. If you look at, I was looking at, and years ago, I always look at this, when these lists come out, like what jobs are good for college kids and what you should try to get.
Yeah.
10 years ago, they were still saying you could get a good government job, you know, IT and government job. Now, if you look at the top 20 list of jobs on Fortune's list, either Forbes or Fortune, they both have these job lists. Not a single one are government jobs, not advocating that at all, because government can't be hiring, isn't hiring, has already passed its peak on hiring, can't afford to. And not going to. That's not the future. And so the future is not looking towards Washington.
I don't know. It might change. Here we go. We got, let's see. The Federal Reserve is drawing up plans for another $4 trillion injection of cash via quantitative easing.
I'm telling you, when that money hits the streets and it hasn't all hit from past production of paper money, it really, it's the death of money is what it is.
Well, it's $4 trillion here, $8.5 trillion lost there. I mean, pretty soon this money went somewhere, and it's going to make it back here in a freaking freight train, and it's going to go fast, and it's going to... That's why we say, you know, this stuff won't happen all at once, but it will happen overnight. I mean, you see it, but then all of a sudden, boom, it's Monday, and you go, what the hell just happened?
Yep. I mean, when you can't pay your electric bill, but you can burn up dollar bills in your fireplace and heat that way. I mean, it's worthless. It's going to shift things.
Well, we got another drop in silver. Silver is down to 1864 now. You know, my son.
Me. People are a lot more people than you think are aware. Well, I mean, this is part of the Ron Paul revolution and everything else, but maybe it's taken 15 or 20 years. But people are way more aware of how contemptuous their government is, and how the government is not helping the economy, and that how they need to look out for their own families. I mean, people are buying gold, silver. I mean, it's expensive.
Now's a good time. Go get it.
Yeah. People need to, and they need to do other things. People need to develop their skills. I mean, I'll tell you, now I'm not living in a big urban area, okay, with high rises, but you drive through people's towns and places where people are, and everybody's got gardens in their front yard, you know?
Yeah, the number one story on Freedom's Phoenix right now is easy to build, do-it-yourself portable energy generator, solar. And this guy, it's cool, man. It's just like flexible panels. He folds up an accordion. He just takes over his shoulder. He goes out to work on building concrete. He's turning an electric concrete mixer out there on a fence on Lone Prairie. And he goes out and he takes this thing off his shoulder. He lays out the panels, and it has capacitors and an inverter, not a battery. It's just capacitors. So it gives him that insulation of power. He's doing live. I'm going, hell yeah. I put that up. All my friends are going, oh, man, we'll go get one of them. This is cool. It's a whole new tech.
That's right. People are, even people that you don't think of who may be still part of the whole government system, you know, the party system and whatnot. Even those people who don't really question how they're being, livestock to the government, at the same time, they're still looking to grow some of their own food. They're still looking to figure out how to preserve food, how to do things for themselves. There's a lot of positive movement towards independence and preparation for independence that people are doing. Not the people that are already out in their homestead or really, totally ready, but there's a lot of people that have opened their minds to getting ready and have taken some small steps to do it.
No outdoor space? No problem. You can put a nano farm in your kitchen. That's one of another popular thing. It's a kind of piece of furniture that sits up there and it's just growing greens.
What's a nano farm?
Yep.
Teeny weeny pug baby farm?
I look at home and garden keep. which is owned by the Disney Channel, so they don't have America Interest in Heart or anything. It is just an entertainment channel. But Home and Garden TV and Do-It-Yourself Network, they're owned, by, I think, by the same people. They have all these shows, and I've watched that show. I've watched that channel for 20 years. And what people are doing now is when they do somebody's backyard, they always build them a garden. And half the time, they put a chicken coop in there.
Yeah.
They didn't do that 20 years ago. That would be unheard of to put a chicken coop in a urban suburban backyard. That would be unheard of. But they're doing it now as a matter of course. And all this tiny home building, which is just like basically upscale mobile homes, you know, pull trailers. All this tiny home stuff, they interview these people. And sure, everybody goes, oh, that's weird. I would never do that. But what they're hearing, they're watching it, and they're saying, I wouldn't do that. But what they're hearing is the guy says, I want freedom. I don't want to pay taxes on my property and have it owned by me. That's what they're saying on mainstream television. I'm telling you, it's a beautiful thing.
You know, they had Doomsday Preppers, and it was one episode. The guy that did our aquaponics here had a company called Endless Food Systems. And he went on. He knew they were just going to punk him. We need to have you build this underground escape hatch kind of sea container in your backyard through the bedroom false back cabinet thing. And he's like, yeah, blah, blah, blah. So he did it because he wanted to promote aquaponics. So he gets on, and we just knew it was, and the National Geographic called me, and they wanted us to get involved again. Just crap. I didn't want to play. But what happened was, they ask him, they go, why are you, they always go, you know, why are you doing this? What crazy tinfoil hat reason are you doing this? And he goes, democide. And they go, what? And he goes, yeah, it's when the government kills their own people. The vast majority of people dying has been from their own government. I just don't want to starve. And I'm like, score! It was all worth it for that. And he was a reasonable guy, Christian family. You were just doing it because of democide. Democide, don't you read?
Yeah. I'm telling you, the movement, the Ron Paul movement, all this stuff, not trusting government, it has permeated so deep and so far in society, far beyond, I think, what we ever expected. And so it is there. The seeds are planted. And when seeds are planted, you know, when everything else is ripe, they sprout and they grow. So I don't worry about the country.
Since time.
I don't have to put my weight in politics. I don't worry so much because I do think the people are kind of subtly and deep inside they're having a sense of what they need to do, and they're doing it. And why are they doing it? Because we love our kids. More than anything, we care about where we live and our neighbors and our friends. It's all local, and of course that locality. You know, we're strengthened by the global network that says, "Hey, I think like you do." So it's all good. It's all good. You know, they're.
Well, it sounds like you're feeling better. I mean, you live on. Describe your property. Your kind of your nearest neighbors or what?
Well, I can see them all. I can see them all. But I would say. A quarter of a mile away.
Okay, so you have how many acres you considered your property?
About 50 acres we have.
Oh, okay. So, I mean, you're not in the bustling downtown sidewalks of New York kind of thing. And you got horses and livestock, and you're out there, and you're Jericho.
Yeah, well, to some extent. I mean, truly, if they want to come and, if you don't pay your taxes, I mean, forget about it. You know, they can take what they want. I think I'm too far away from town that they don't see our property as valuable as wanting to. I mean, I am paying my taxes, but if I stopped, I think it would be a while before they took the property. But, we're 12 miles from town, which is good.
What town?
Mount Jackson, Woodstock, all those towns.
Well, I mean, is that what? How big a metropolis is that?
I think 2,000 people, I think, in Mount Jackson and 45, I don't know what's in Woodstock.
Okay, how far to real town?
Harrisonburg and Winchester are medium-sized cities, and I'm 40 miles from each of those.
So you're in the small community of Leave Me Alone-ism.
We kind of are, and I have to say, because I ran in the 6th District, which runs up and down 81, Shenandoah Valley, there's a lot of people that come out to Shenandoah Valley and do or try to do a lot of what we're trying to do. And a lot of them are making money at it. I mean, a lot of people are coming out and they're raising stuff. So there's a growth of vineyards and there's a growth of home breweries. I mean, just rapid growth. We have land here. We have halfway decent weather, although it's humid in the summer. We have, it's pretty, like most places are pretty. It's pretty. So a lot of people are coming out here and doing stuff. And I think I told you this story before real quick, but a friend of my daughter's who graduated from Lynchburg College with her a couple, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, she and her husband, who I think also graduated from Lynchburg, got a yurt, a used yurt for $5,000, had their parents buy them 6 or 7 acres of land somewhere outside of Lynchburg, land just a field. It was just a field with nothing on it. And they turned it into a community-supported agriculture thing, and you see pictures of it on their website, and it's, like, gorgeous. They worked, not, you know, dawn till dusk and after. And they actually are not on welfare, but I do believe she qualifies for WIC, but she's not on welfare. She'd make enough money by their program of growing crops, and I think they have some other stuff they're moving into. But they're college-educated people who were supposed to go work in offices somewhere, but they decided not to do that. They can certainly feed themselves, and they're also feeding their neighbors, and they have a good network of people that can feed them if need be or to help them. So this is becoming... Well, in our area, and I think it may be, you know, maybe in where you are, you know a lot of people doing the same thing. And I think across the country, you're seeing this. And it's a really nice shift in the economy, although it's not an easy way to live. It's not an easy way to live.
Yeah, there's a lot of things you can do to make it easier. We did the aquaponics thing, and I vote chickens. Chickens are butt simple, man. I mean, I'm all over this chicken thing. When we talk, I got to give you a side note here. You'll appreciate this. Years ago, when you and I were talking one time, I don't know if you remember this. You know, I'm just like, hey, man, I just want to be in a leave-me-alone zone. And I go, whoa, I better go get that for somebody who does it. Yeah, so I went on during the break, and I got leave-me-alone-zone.com. You remember that?
And I
had that, and then all of a sudden it's starting to, you know people contact me, because I mention every now and then. Well, this is what happened. There's a guy that was an attorney for the Goldwater Institute here, which means he's all coked to pussed up, you know. And
yeah,
So there was an effort that they have that this guy from Argentina that's worth gazillions of dollars or something, and they're losing opportunity to be free there, and the Honduras thing didn't go, and they don't want to do the seasteading. So they're kind of, hey, we'll spend some money on if we can get a leave-me-alone zone of a square mile kind of deal in America somewhere. And he jumps up and goes, Oh, pick me. I know leave me alone zone people. You okay? So he comes over, and we talked a few months ago before, it was like early June. It's gone through the summer. He and his family came over. He left the Goldwater Institute to work on this thing full time. And he came over, and Davi and I were just hanging out, and we're in the pool, and he's giving, you know, Davi the full spiel, and this is it. What they're planning on doing is having to have hearings, you know, at the state legislature September 6th, so within a couple weeks. So they're going there, and they just want a bunch of landowners and people just to show support for the concept of stripping all laws down to common law and constitution, no regulation, no zoning, no nothing, square mile of Disneyland, solar farms, space station, whatever.
They want an agreement with the state-level government that this is a common law zone.
Oh, I like that. So, that's interesting.
Okay, now think about this.
So they call it a prosperity zone if you want to look it up.
Yeah, blah, blah, blah. It's all PR, BS, and playing Trump, Hillary, environmental. I don't give a crap. But the point is that they get a square mile, and then you can add on to it and that kind of thing. But what they really want to do is you get a compact with one in Arizona and then another state, and they've got something going on in Oklahoma. So they do two states, then it's a compact, and it goes to treaty level that excommunicates Congress from being able to deal with it in some way. There's some case law. So what they're looking... It's a square mile. Now, then the problem is, tragedy of the commons or something, right? So it's like, okay, what if somebody wants to leave or you're not part of and it's 100% agreement?
Or
blah,
if somebody
blah, blah,
violates
blah.
A contract, how do you excommunicate them?
Yeah, you know, this kind of stuff. So Davi and I are just beating the crap out of them. And we're just going, I don't see how this is, you know, this seems like a hippie commune of I'm not allowed to something. You know, what do I have to do and what am I prevented from doing? And if I got to do something or can't do something, you know, then why am I going over here, you know? And
so, why doesn't the state shut you down as soon as you show that you're successful?
Yeah, and the profit of we need your money. So what Davi came up with the idea and kind of got them all on the right path is he... What were you saying? It's like...
So his problem was, so you have to have a square mile. According to the covenant agreement with the state, like you must maintain at least a square mile of prosperity zone. And people move into that, and they build their businesses, and they build their homes and whatever. And then what happens? You have to have unanimous agreement amongst all occupants. You can't have a dissenter, or this covenant is dissolved or something. And so if someone dissents... What happens to their property? Does it revert to state jurisdiction? Like, and he's called this the Swiss cheese problem. That, like, what happens when people start puncturing holes in your square mile, and then you don't have a full square mile,
you know.
And then the state says, well, you don't have your full square mile anymore, so we're going to dissolve the covenant, right? And so I said, well, then you have your square mile, and everybody agrees that that's kind of a sacrifice zone that nobody builds in, and you build around the square mile, because you're allowed to add plots to the square mile. You're just not allowed to have less than a square mile. So you just have that as your kind of like, this is here to make the state happy.
Yeah, here's a little league team around or, it. You know, the park or you could even have it, it's Disneyland. I mean, you could have it privately owned by one guy that, farms or something.
As long as he was like committed to occupying the whole thing and not breaking it up, then it solves the problem.
So this concept, the point that I'm making with this is that, you know, from you and I, you know, yakking about this stuff and, you know, doing that and me going, because they come in with all kinds of stuff. You know, they want to refi America for our debt and the con of, you know, blood, same people. And I'm just going, no, I just need to leave me alone zone. You know, what happens when you refi? Is my grandchildren still owe all this debt? You're going to refi America on their back or something? You know, I need... None. They go, oh, we go talk to Ernie. And so we're kind of crafting it in such a way, and they have the hearing this September trying to get traction on this. And usually it's just these guys just need an excuse to have a job, you know, just advocate for something. But I go, if we go up there and testify, I get to say what I want. I want my, you know, naked zombie dancing brothel opium den square mile or something. I mean, you know,
gay cyborgs get to defend their marijuana fields with AK-47s.
So there are changes in attitude. And then when you get, like, the Coke guys coming in, talking about this kind of stuff, going this way and wanting to, you know, be buddies with us, you know, it kind of tells you, you know, the worms turned a little bit.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, I've told you this story before about what happened with No Child Left Behind in Utah. The federal government, the Department of Education, Utah said, we can't meet your standards. We don't like your program, so we're going to give you back that 5%. We don't want your money. Take your money and your advice and get the hell out of Utah. That's what the state educator said. And, you know, instead of accepting that and saying, well, you know, we're going to punish and penalize you for this. This is awful. The head of the Department of Education, or whatever, came out to Utah. And next thing you knew, Utah had a waiver. They didn't have to comply with any of the No Child Left Behind, and they could still keep the money. See, the federal government needs us to need them. If we don't need them, it collapses.
Wow, they actually just let them keep the money, too?
Yeah, they let them keep the money, too. Because, see, the government gives that money. You realize, you know, how government budgeting works.
You got to have a seatbelt law or you lose your freeway, blah, blah, blah.
What would they have done with that extra money that they were giving Utah? They couldn't very well... lose control because they get control through the giving of the money, and yet it's a really bad way to control people. And I think even parents know this. If you control your kid by paying them, what control do you really have? You really don't have control. Maybe it makes you feel useful.
You know, here's another crack in like Child Left Behind thing. They have the Common Core stuff. My young grandkids, they're second, first, kindergarten, that kind of thing. And here comes the Common Core thing. Well, they're going, I went through my first year this last year with this, and my granddaughter, all right, let me see it. Well, it's just stupid, you know, kind of a draw a line in this pack of crayons as 10 crayons and then 3 extra crayons, 13 crayons, and, you know, just crap. And I'm going, all right, it didn't seem like it was lies. You know, it was just stupid, and it kind of was confusing. And I'm not sure what the hell, what common denominator or low denominator they're trying to go for here. But what was really mesmerizing and just sickening and give you a nauseous feeling in your stomach is at the end of the year, it was the same problems.
Wow.
They had like 3 boxes of crayons. So it's 33 instead of 13. We advanced. We learned. It took a year for us to learn that 3 10 packs of crayons, you know, is 30. I'm going, are you freaking kidding me? So then they pulled my second grade, the granddaughter, out of that school to go to another school, a traditional charter private, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then her little brother, it's a year younger, you know, he starts going to school. And immediately, they already see it's a money thing. Well, these people have already taken one kid out, you know, and the only reason they went there, that because they had like an advanced whatever the hell. And then they're going, no, we need to take him and put him in the advanced super kid class of he actually learned something or something. And it's just a PR thing. And I'm going, oh, so they don't do Common Core? Well, yeah, but it's different color paper or something. I mean, I haven't found out yet, but they're getting pressure.
A different color.
And that's a perfect demonstration of how you change government. It's not through voting, unless you call it voting with your feet. It's basically just ignoring government, making it irrelevant, rejecting it, and choosing something different. Because the government needs us. I mean, this is the whole, theory of power. You know, the government needs us to be powerful. If they don't have us, it's nothing but a shell. It's the emperor with no clothes. So
it's a farm with no cattle.
You know, if we would just, and this is my awareness, which is going on, you know, which is what you're working on, Ron Paul, everybody, all these people, just learning more, internet helps, causes people to be way more cynical and way more aware of alternatives, way more creative, and it does change government over time.
Well,
although,
Karen, my thing is that, you know, although, I tell you what my although is, although we even have Karen Kotowski still voting, that's not my although. You know,
well, it's a fun thing to do.
As long as
it's fun.
Everybody has their own version.
I just like filling out surveys.
even with all this creativity, and it sounds great, there's no, just leave me alone zone, sounds wonderful, and a lot of things that are going on. I do think, you know, the economic system is not going to be sustainable in this country. This money printing, this devaluation of our money, there's going to be a painful period, and I think the old people, the baby boomers on Social Security, are going to be some of the first to really feel it.
Yeah, no, that's going to be an inflationary day. Oh, there's no inflation. I'm like, yeah, try and buy a piece of metal, anything. You know?
I'll hand it to you. It's fun is the best reason to vote I've heard so far. I mean, like, because the primary reason I don't vote is because I just find it so humiliating. So if
then
the more power to you. It's like a free video game.
And it's silly, but you're right, though. When you vote, you are giving, you're putting your personal stamp on saying that it's legitimate, that the government's legitimate, and it is not legitimate. So I really have to make the point, if you're not voting for anything other than fun and entertainment, then you know, you should be voting.
Well, I mean, it's just like, you can't win if you don't play. I mean, you know, it's like it's like saying that you can't win if you don't play, even though they've already predetermined the lottery numbers.
and just like you've shown with the small shifts in the school offerings, the bottom line is you control government by just like you do with raising kids or training horses, you know, you kind of ignore the stuff you don't like and you reward the stuff you do.
No. I'm with you, sister. I'm all over, you know, having whatever influence that you can. I'm just seeing increasingly, and we talk about it on the show. I mean, we do the Trump report every Thursday, but I'm always saying you're still voting. I mean, you know, but it gives voice to, you know, exactly the arguments that you're making, and it's powerful coming from you. But I just see the participation in the process is the goal of they, them, those. It's like, see, we got another one to go to the altar and worship the state at, and they pulled the lever. And I'm going, yay, or punch the dial. Because I'm running for office again. Now, you know, county recorder.
You run for office? What you run for?
County recorder, but I'm just doing it as a write-in with the Democrats spending the money and the mailings to get me on the ballot because they hate the Republican.
I love it. Yeah.
So I'm just like, I go, it was part of the deal, the libertarians that they do and they help, because of course the Democrats feel libertarians in there, you know, give them a better, you know, whatever. But I'm not putting forth a freaking lick. They're lucky at the last day, at the last minute, they went down and filled out the last paperwork of their shut up and do what you want and I don't care. Because I'm not voting. Yeah. Well, you're going to go write yourself in? Hell no. You know? But the thing is
vote
what,
for me so I don't have to.
That's good. Vote for me so I don't have to. Hell yeah. You know?
And it was,
but it was a deal, you know, to help the Libertarian Party here, because with the U.S. Senate race and with the, well, this is what happened. They came to me, the executive director of the Democratic, former executive director of the Democratic Party, was a guy that I met in like 05, 06, around in there, that was a Iraq vet, I think, that came back anti-war and started just quickly moving up inside the Democratic Party here. He comes executive director, and now he's a smart guy, and he helps raise money in Democratic campaign or electing Democrats. So they, and I had met with him on election fraud. And he's like, oh, well, you know, tell me about what's this crazy Ernie guy, him and Charles. You know, we were on Air America affiliate here. So I met with him and said, look, if you're not addressing this, 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 you're just wasting your time. I don't know what the hell you're talking about. And so he took that to heart. And then there's a lot of other stories and evidence came out. And, you know, Ernie's not as crazy as we thought. And I ran for Secretary of State in 06. I'm on the ballot. All the stuff that I said was going to happen happened. We got laws. Yeah. Pass that, you know, manual validation of the computer program with the paper, the actual ballots. Then it's supposed to be under 24/7 surveillance on the web, you know, that you can see that nobody's touched, and they disappeared. And they go, what the hell happened to the ballots? Well, they were in, you know, Joe Arpaio's training room that he had, or what they do in there. Oh, because it's the sheriff. Don't worry about it, you know. And we file suit, and we get all kinds of stuff. I mean, it's just to make a point of how BS this whole thing is.
Yeah. And see, that's, you know, there's a, that is a good use of the political structure, because you're using it, just like Ron Paul did, to educate people.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I don't have a problem. I've been in, like, every election cycle since 90. I mean, you know, I don't have a problem running. I just have a problem voting, okay? So,
yeah.
I go, well, I haven't voted since 02. And the reason was, is I went and I go and vote, and you have like this checkoff list, you know, to-do list. You know, take kid to school, drop off this, pay bill, vote. And every one, you feel like, hell, even paying a bill, you feel like you accomplished something. And when I checked off voted, I felt bad. I felt like I did something wrong, and I trust my intuition. And
wait,
I just
where
said,
did you check off voting?
It was just a to-do list. I mean, you know, I was out doing stuff that day.
Okay.
And I just, you know, you check a box to-do list. And when I did it, I go, voted. And I go, ew. Exactly. And I said, nah, I'm not doing that anymore.
No, this was for me.
Well, the last vote that I did actually do was, it was in the general election in 08. And I made up my own write-in sheet on parchment paper, kind of made it all stylized. Oh. And I put Ron Paul. I wrote it in, had my voter ID number. I made it all official looking as much as, you know, I could, and I signed it. And I walked in, and they got me out. Oh, here you go. And they hand me the ballot, and I put that paper on top of it and just handed it back and walked out. As I was walking out, the election worker, she goes, it's not going to count. And I go, it already did.
You think yours is going to count?
Yeah, I counted it. I go, F you. I don't care, you know. So I got a lot of pleasure in that. Well, Donna went and voted in the primary, because she went and registered Republican to vote for him in the primary, and everybody was provisional ballot, people were pissed, they're yelling and screaming, it was all, you know, I just standing there, I just went with her, and I'm going, yep, just what I thought. So this is a, this whole mechanism, this whole thing, when they did the Trump election, they had the presidential preference BS straw poll beauty contest, doesn't mean anything, taxpayer ripoff primary that they do here. They did that, and they went from like 400 precincts down to 90. I mean, as Helen Purcell is the one that's the county recorder. Well, she did everything to piss off every Republican you could possibly do. I mean, it was just so now that everybody's wanting me to do it, and then the Democrats need me to do it. So it's just like, do it. And I go, no. I'm not getting one single freaking signature. I'm not doing anything. I'll do the write-in thing because they keep changing the laws. I can't give validity to this thing. But we'll find out within a week or two. The election is next week. You know, whether I got, and it'll take them a long time because we sued for them to even count the write-ins, because they didn't, that gave us ballot status before. So we sued them. They actually had to judge. The court order made them count them. We had enough. We get on. We go, but what about all these other candidates? And they go, oh, screw them. That wasn't in the suit. So I'm going, I don't even count on them even counting them, because I'm going to be on the ballot to displace their boss. You feel me?
Yeah, that's good.
So I have no confidence in this whole freaking thing other than I get to put up signs.
Yeah. So it's all, you know, it's all working for liberty. I mean, you're a patriot, you know. You're helping your country out.
Yeah, I'm helping my country, Dalvi. You hear that? I'm a patriot.
For me, it was 2008.
I'm a country guy.
I was like gung-ho Ron Paul in 2008, because I had discovered Ron Paul in 2004, and I, like, discovered him in Santa Cruz, California. So, I thought I was the only one. Nobody'd heard of him. Nobody, like, talked about these ideas. I thought I was the only one. And in 2008, I realized, man, there's all these other people that feel this way, and there he's actually running. And so, like, I donated all the money I had. I went out and sine waved. I, like, had my car all souped up, like the Revolution Mobile.
Oh, cool.
And, and then I just watched all the malfeasance in the primary, right? And all the little shady dealings and all the little, we're going to cut off your mic, even though, like, being able to speak was the compromise you made and whatever. Yeah. And so the actual, like, election comes around, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to go and vote. And I, like, go in, and it's like, president. And I'm like, I can't vote for any of these people. Like, I just can't. Like, my hand won't do it. and so I wrote in Ron Paul, and I'm like, I just felt icky. I felt so, like, here I am, like, begging for a vote. They're not even going to count, you know? Like,
yeah, but, you
and
know,
I'm just like, this is too humiliating. This is,
as long as you don't circle one of their candidates that they've forced on you, you know, you're rejecting, you're using the ceremony to send a message of
rebellion. They don't give a crap. They're not even.
You think another set of human eyes fell on my ballot? I don't think that happened.
You know what, Karen? I mean, this is my thing.
You know what? Let me tell you. I will tell you what they care about. And I'm going to do this like I've done before. They don't like undervoting. You know how, like, when you go have your election next week and they'll be like, you're going to vote for McCain or the other one, I hope she wins.
Ward.
You know, and you're going to vote for your recorder and all these other votes. Local, there'll be some local races, I'm sure, that people have on. When you vote for one of a party, like, let's say you happen to like one of them, and you might, like, I don't know if you're going to vote in the McCain race against McCain or not, but let's say you did. That's going to count as a Republican vote. And then if there's other Republicans and you don't vote for them, or you write in or you leave it blank, they do count that. They count undervoting, and they hate it. We had a guy, trust me, they pay attention to the undervote, and a write-in vote is considered an undervote because they don't count it. And so when you identify as one party or the other, but then you don't go party line, they hate that. It sends a message, and it tells them they don't have control over your mind. It tells them they're ineffective. It tells them you're not a robot. So there's things you can do.
Yeah, it does. You went and voted. I can't give them my under. I gave a big, giant, I didn't vote under vote.
Well,
yeah, you know what probably bothers them more than undervoting is low voter turnout.
Yeah, that's true, too.
In 2000, I was running for Congress against Shattuck, and it was Freedom Communications. You know, they had the Orange County Register. Well, they have the newspaper, the East Valley Tribune here is one of the major newspapers in the Valley. And they came to me, and they said, hey, you know, we need Ernie, we need you to write an article to encourage people to vote. We're all freaked out. There's nobody voting. Oh, my God, we need the Libertarian to tell people to vote. I'm like, you're talking to the wrong guy. I mean, you know, so I wrote the article, and it was like, voting never freed anybody. And and my whole thing was, and this is, if you look that up, it's the last couple paragraphs, you know, in there. I kind of go, and I remember I said this, I go, there will come a time where people, whether the vote totals are accurate or not, will take to the streets demanding their freedom, and you'll be begging for libertarians to participate in the debate so somebody will watch them.
Mm-hmm. And say, hey, you're getting close to the truth on this.
Freaking man, we're marching right towards that. Are you looking forward to you think there's even going to be a Hillary-Trump debate?
Well, I really don't know, because I don't think Hillary will do well in that debate, and they don't need to have bad publicity if she starts to stumble. It's all a big game. You know, it's a big show. What gambles will they take? I just don't know. And I think there's a lot of people pushing to have the establishment Republican posing as Libertarian vote up on that stage too. So and I think that Johnson would do fine in such, you know, he's a quasi liberty minded Republican. I mean, that's the best you can say about him. That would be something to have that up here. And it would make the other two, he might make the other two look bad or not. But I don't think, since they can't predict it or control it, I agree. They may try to just make sure it doesn't happen.
Yeah, I'm not confident that there's going to actually be a tradition like we've
a
seen debate. Yeah, I don't know how would they do it. They'd phone it in and be prepared Skype speeches or something. I mean, I don't know. Actually, go up there and have a debate that is open to Trump, because they can't trust Trump to do whatever the hell they want him to do anyway.
Well,
I want to see him play Jeopardy. That's what
Hillary.
I want to see.
Even Hillary is not predictable, because she could have an aneurysm right there on the stage, and they don't want that. So,
and Trump's going to be trying to induce an epileptic seizure. That's, I think, his strategy.
Well, there's some secrets between the Clinton and Trump, as individuals that they know. And he goes, now, Hillary, you told me that one time that kind of thing.
I want to see Trump come out on stage in one of those, sequin big top church jackets.
Right.
You know, with all the little sparkles.
Liberace.
And, yeah, right?
It would be way unpredictable, and it would be very entertaining. And you got a good point. It may not happen. And some of these October surprises or whatever, these wars that seem to be being stoked and pushed by our administration, could be a part of this kind of thing. Or you could have some, they could arrange local domestic disturbances that would say, "Well, we can't do the debate."
Oh, hell, it's going to be a mushroom cloud, man. I mean, they'll do whatever the hell they got to do. I don't know what that. I mean, we don't have enough flashpoints. We got the South China Sea. We got the economic. Oh my God! We got Ukraine, Russia, Turkey, NATO, nuclear weapons being moved from Turkey to Romania. I mean, I'm going Romania. What? Seriously, Romania.
Yeah. It's
nuts. They'll say that the protesters on both sides are too unruly and too violent, and so the debate is going to happen in secret behind closed doors, and the moderator will just come out and tell the public who won the debate.
And really, it is when they lose control, that's what it's all about. I mean, politics is about who has control, and the deep state, the status quo, whatever, they're losing control. And Trump is a part of that. Bad candidate Hillary Clinton is a part of that, because she's not, she's well scripted, but she has issues. Her tripping, constant tripping. I mean, people are watching for the next time she trips. And everybody trips. Everybody trips. I mean, physically, I've tripped on
Gerald
trips.
Ford was always falling down.
That's right. So, but the thing is, now that's what has gotten the public attention. People are looking for this. It's becoming very entertaining and out of control. It's just like, looks like Pokemon Go, it kind of came from nowhere, and it's this big phenomenon. I mean, people are always looking for the next interesting thing, and we get a little bit of that with this campaign, something interesting to watch. It's not very stately. It's not very a status quo control. It's scary. I think the deep state is scared. And we're part of that because we like to be entertained. And this is a problem when you give them bread and circuses. Pretty soon that's what they want. They want a circus, and they don't care where it comes from. We're watching the circus in Washington right now. We're laughing our heads off.
I don't even want the bread. I just want to watch the circus. I want to see Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump jello wrestle.
the Trump thing, I'm wondering. I get a lot when I talk to Roger Stone or we go over the news or whatever, and then you'll build up, and then all of a sudden he does this McCain endorsement thing and Ryan, and he's capitulating to the machine, or he needs, I don't know if he needs, I mean, I enthusiastically endorse blah, blah, blah. I had to watch, I'm going, there's a game being played here. I'm just not sure with whom. What's the game? Who's he playing with?
Well, I think he was playing, I think after the convention, he was playing with the RNC and that idiot brain Rentz Priebus or whatever, and all these other guys and neocons and whatnot. And I think he was trying to work with them. I think he found out he couldn't work with them. And I'm sure the McCain endorsement and some of these others came from that bad advice, which he has since rejected. So he's doing his own thing again. Whatever that is, nobody knows. But at least it's not. I think he's kind of pushed back on the RNC and told him that your advice is not working.
So since he did that, was just a couple weeks ago.
I know. But now he's got a new campaign manager, and he's not an RNC person, and he's fired people that were listening to the RNC. So I think he's rejected once again the establishment, which is the only reason he's got one of the primaries. He's posing himself as the anti-establishment guy, and it's popular.
I want to know who convinced him to do the McCain thing and how they convinced him, and then what caused him to pull back from that, if he did. I mean, I have no idea what the hell that was about.
Yeah, I don't know. And I don't know if it's something they have on Kelly Ward, too. I don't know if she's a super strong candidate. I mean, I think it's McCain's time to die politically. There's no doubt about that. But is Kelly Ward good to do that? I mean, it's that, you know, it could have been they said, look, if you endorse Kelly, here's what we know about it. It's not good. I don't, who knows why.
Now, I've had Kelly on the show, and we've had long conversations at festivals, you know, sitting around the table with her and her mother. And, you know, so a lot of the Ron Paul guys, she really made an effort trying to be buds. But she was a state legislator, and she's just one of them. I mean, she's, you know, she knows how it's played, and I get to be a senator and whatever. And somebody whispered in her ear and told her that she could, and kind of, and you must left, and you're so pretty. And so you go into that thing, but you're up against what they really didn't have enough appreciation for. That when I ran against McCain in 04, I was totally understanding. It's the machine. There is this McCain monetary money freaking goes international, Israel down to the...
Dumped his first wife and married his beer magnate daughter.
Yeah.
I mean, money, and it's all... I mean, that's how politics works anyway, and that's why giving him your vote is kind of a dirty... You get a dirty feeling when you do that. But, you know, hey, it's entertaining. I think we got to laugh, have fun, write in. I mean, I haven't voted for anybody on the ballot in a long time. I write in all the time. So I go vote, but then I write in. Because I say, well, you asked me who I wanted. I want Ron Paul. So I've written him in multiple times. And,
Are you going to run again? Are you ever going to run again?
No, not. I don't think so. It's too much. It's not that. It was fun for a little while. Then it's not fun anymore. So I probably am not going to. There is a need locally here for some budget cutter type people to run for our board of supervisors. So I'm thinking about it. But yeah, it's not going to be anything like big campaign. It's just going to be like again. Like all elections, you know, you go out and take opportunity to get on a soapbox and educate people and make them think. And some people like you, Ernie, you're a talker, I'm a talker, you know. Sometimes we can talk people into stuff.
Well, I tell you one thing is that, you know, you're doing anything and you want to educate some people and you need, you know, some of the stuff that we can do, I'm all over it. I help, you know me, I always like whatever.
Yeah, no, that'd be great. In fact, we'll see, because there is an election. There is a board supervisor slot in our district opening up, and they don't have anybody conservative. They're Republicans. I'm with the Republicans, and they're going to nominate some establishment person, so I'm going to try to prevent that from happening. And but again, a lot of what you do in politics is just piss off the people you don't like. You just do it to entertain yourself, you know, and I'm happy to, if I've got a little time, I can do that. If not, you know, we'll see. I don't care. But anyway, yeah, I'm not a big... I'm with the homestead movement. You know, I'm with the leave me alone zone people.
Yeah, no, we're doing a lot of research. Oh, we started our own company. This is what we're doing. I made those geodesic domes, and I did the the aquadome, and we use them for a lot of different things and festivals and all that. And we got a stamp press that fashions the end of it to make it to where it's not so labor intensive. And we're just, Davi's working on the artwork for us. We got, out there, we're making all the stuff. We're just going to be mass producing inexpensive geodesic domes for the infrastructure to build houses and stuff. And because I'm going, I just don't want to be too too hot, too cold, too hungry, too thirsty, too, and when the it goes to crap, I'm not going to care about what the man in the shiny badge and clipboard says anyway. So, I mean, you know, let's rock and roll. Well, these have become very popular, and they're very functional, and they're inexpensive. I can build the, it looks like I can get like a 3,000 square foot home using the geodesic domes and coated and everything for, God, $10,000-$15,000 if I do all the labor.
And you got a link for all that on your on the Freedom Phoenix at all? Or
there's, you know, to see, we haven't created the other site. We're still working on the artwork now. Okay. I wanted to make sure we could do it first, and then, you know, that became pretty easy. But, we did a four-phase, 28-foot, two-car garage dome. You know, boom, in a day. And I go, ew, and that costs like $300 or $400. You know, it's going to be with a concrete, you know, a coating, it's going to be like $1,200. So I'm going, wow. So we're having fun with this. Then we're, you know, in solar energy production and on the water and on the, you know, food production. We've been building up to this for almost a decade. Well, this is what happens. If you go on... the first one that we did, and it has all the links to how to do it, you just look up Money Dome, Freedom's Phoenix, or something like that. That site will come up, and you'll see the first one that we did, and that was the genesis of it.
Mm-hmm.
Money Dome. Because that was a dome that we did for going to Pork Fest and doing monetary exchanges with all the different...
That sounds good. I'm going to look that up. I definitely am. That sounds interesting. Look, Ernie, I got to go.
No! You've only been on for 3 hours.
You've been drafted.
I'm about to die.
All right, thanks for spending time with us, Karen. It was awesome.
Oh, it's always a pleasure, and call me anytime.